Hello, and welcome to the Mayo Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 comics sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. The numbers we'll be talking about in this episode are the top 300 comic sales for April 2017 as sold through Diamond to retailers. This is based on what is invoiced to retailers, so it is what is sold into stores, because the publishers consider the stores their customer. It's obviously not what the stores have sold to us, because a lot of things are still sitting on store shelves, but it's generally reflective of the basic sales trends. I kind of equate it to almost the Electoral College. We've got a select group of individuals that are kind of taking the quote-unquote popular vote from the readers, figuring out what the orders really ought to be, and then submitting that forward and stuff, and voting as to what's the best seller, if you will. Not a perfect analogy, but it's close enough. If we look at the breakdown of the top 300 this time, 42.25% of the total units for the top 300 went to Marvel, 38.09% went to DC. That works out to a little under 300,000 unit difference. So a much wider gap than we've seen over recent months, but we've also recently had some really narrow gaps, but not one where it's just, you know, a landslide victory in either direction. Image had about 8.38% of the total units, then Dark Horse another 2.4, IDW another 2.16. That, of course, rounding out the premier publishers and leaving about 6.71% of the total units for the top 300 for all of the other publishers combined, of which there's about 16. But again, that's just the way the market is these days.
And I will point out the Marvel Advantage. They did their 2.75 million with 90 new items. DC did their 2.4 with 77. Plus two reorder items. Marvel's 92 items, which means each item averaged 29,924, whereas DC, each of the 77 items, averaged 32,233. So part of that difference, more of that difference is in volume than it is in success of individual titles.
Well, let's talk about that for a bit, because not only did DC do it with fewer items on the list, and I don't have my system right now, and I'm working towards it to where I can count up the number of different variant covers and such. Mm. But Marvel is way heavier on that than DC.
Well, this is a bad month to say that.
In terms of the number of variant covers they do, in terms of the impact of them, I'll agree with you on that. We'll get to that in a minute.
Yep.
But my point was, for a expenditure of cost and effort, Marvel's going to a lot more trouble. Because they're doing, in some cases, five or six covers for some of these comics. And there are one or two with DC that they're doing, you know, maybe three or four or something. But most DC comics get the regular cover and maybe an alternate cover. Sometimes it's even a variant incentive one where the retailers have to jump through a hoop to get it. But often that's not the case. So I think DC is, you know, got a bit more focused effort. They're expending less time and trouble to get their sales. Not that they're not working hard, too. I mean, they are, but they're not having to, again, pay an artist for a variant cover on the hopes that that particular cover gooses the sales enough to make a profit beyond just the cost of that cover.
Yeah. And like I said, just purely on a units by, you know, units divided by items, DC averaged 2,300 more units per item than Marvel did.
Well, I think right now we're in a interesting spot in so much as usually Marvel has the lion's share of the sales, just historically. And they've had over 50% at times and whatnot. So they're in a generally a dominant position in the market. But if you look at the last, say, 10 months, mm-hmm. it's split pretty even as to who's in the lead, if you will, between Marvel and DC on a month-to-month basis. that's really unusual because typically Marvel's in the lead like 9 out of 10 months or something. Not necessarily consecutive, but in general, it's not often that DC is able to get more units on the top 300 than Marvel. But, you know, they had the past 2 months, Marvel again on top this time. But prior to February and March, Marvel had the top for 4 months in a row, but then the previous three were DC, and pretty strong for DC.
Well, but Rebirth, I mean, when Marvel does their Rebirth-ish thing...
The pendulum swings back and forth, no doubt.
Yeah.
But it's unusual for DC to have had so many months in a reasonably compressed time frame where they did as well as they have. You know, normally it's one of those things where... You know, if they've got a winning month, it may be a little bit before they have another, or they'll go through a few because of the launch of Rebirth or the launch of the new 52 or something like that. My point is DC is a bit more competitive right now than I think they typically are, in the fact that over the last 10 months, it's a bit of a coin toss as to who's going to have more units on the top 300 is probably a good thing for the industry.
Yeah, no doubt about it. What is slightly less encouraging, I guess, is Marvel and DC still make up just over 80% the total units. And when you include the other premier publishers, you're at 93.3%, leaving just 6.7% for everybody else.
I'd really like to know how those percentages look with a more complete picture of sales than just the top 300. Because I think it biases towards Marvel and DC a lot in that respect, because their stuff generally sells better. And I don't know if it would make a huge difference or not, but I am curious.
How many books do you have to sell 1,000 copies of to make a dent in that percentage, though?
Well, and that's what I was going to say. I mean, the reality of the situation is the top 300 ends right now around, what, 4,000 or 5,000 units or something.
And we've got visibility down to about 1,900 for some of the smaller stuff.
Right. So there's only so many units some of these publishers can be selling. And we know most of them don't produce enough material.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there are places like Zenoscope where we'll see an item or two in the top 300, and we know they're publishing significantly more than that.
And we see a bunch in that small publisher stuff kind of between 300 and 400 right now. But again, those are all kind of in the 3,000 to 2,000 range. I mean, you need a whole lot of books.
Oh, yeah. I don't think it would change the percentage as much, but I am curious and I'd like to either confirm or deny that.
Yeah. But like Zenoscope currently on the top 300 has about 4,400 units. If you include the stuff below the 300 that we know about, maybe they get to 7,000 units. Maybe one or two items below that gets them to 8,500 units. That's still not anywhere near the 2.7 million units.
No, and it's not even enough to necessarily get them up close to even a half of a full percentage point, much less a full percentage point on the sales.
No, it would get them from about 0.07 of a percent to about 0.12 of a percent.
Yeah. I would love to have at least 1 month's worth of data where that sort of a thing could just be kind of proven out. Because again, anything lower on the list, it's just not selling that much.
Now, the market share, the overall market share, that in theory includes all that stuff, right?
That includes all the comics, all the trades, I think all the magazines. So in theory, yeah, it does. But it's one of those that over the years, I've really come to kind of ignore it because they would be things like Eagle Moss used to regularly show up here. And of course, they're doing the $16, $12, whatever they were costing at the time. You know, Star Trek Enterprise ships or the chess pieces with the magazine, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And in my mind, a unit comparison is silly to do between, you know, $2.99 or $3.99 comics and $16 to $20, you know, trades and hardcovers or magazines and figurines and stuff.
But that dollar percentage is by dollars, right? Invoiced?
It is by invoiced dollars, I believe, yes.
Yeah. It's funny we were talking about Zenoscope, because just quickly looking at the market share breakdown of the comic publishers on here, seemingly Zenoscope, Archie, and Titan have the most dollars coming in that aren't necessarily represented by the top 300 in comics and trades.
Yeah. And for Zenoscope, they've got, you know, some of their titles have gone like 100 issues, I think, with Grim Fairy Tales itself.
Yeah, it's over that now.
And they've got trades and stuff, so it could be that maybe they're moving a trade or two a month on a lot of their stuff or whatever. Something that may not seem like a whole lot and certainly isn't enough to hit the trade radar or whatever, the top 300. But, I mean, they've been in business a long time. They're at just about every convention, it seems like. So they're doing something right.
Yeah.
And pointing out the convention stuff, that means they potentially also have decent sales at conventions beyond just what's happening through Diamond.
Yes.
So I think Diamond is kind of the controlling, dominant influence in sales within the comic book marketplace, which I think has an impact on the trades side. Obviously, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, places like that, trades, you know, have a bigger mass market impact or presence than comics do. But I think a lot of what happens or what goes into the trades is determined by the comics. So even through that kind of a secondary path, what we're seeing here through sales through Diamond on the comic stuff is influencing the course of what's happening on the trade side as well as what's happening on the comic side.
Yeah.
But it's important to remember this is not the totality of sales, nor does anyone claim it to be. This is literally what's selling through Diamond, which is the only distributor of new comics to comic stores.
Yep.
Didn't always used to be the case, but it is now, and it certainly simplifies the number crunching, so there's that. But I think competition is usually good for most industries, in the fact that there's just the one distributor now, I don't think is doing anyone any good, including Diamond.
I'm not sure it's hurting anybody either, though.
No, and that's fair. Diamond's not doing a bad job.
Yeah, I haven't figured out what the advantage of another distributor would be.
The main advantage I see, and this is a theoretical advantage, I don't know if it's a real advantage, is I've heard over the years from a lot of people how hard it is to get their comic carried by Diamond. And I'm not saying Diamond should loosen their standards or anything of the sort. I've seen some comics in previews that I'm like, I don't think it would have made my cut. So, I mean, I'm not saying that.
No, and I completely understand that.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure. Well, a few people have tried smaller distributors for comics shops and seemingly haven't been very successful over the last decade for exactly those type of books. I mean, if you can't do enough volume to keep the lights on, you can't do enough volume to keep the lights on.
But I think the problem with that is, and this is a direct result of the distributor wars of the 90s, where, you know, for those who aren't aware, Marvel did their own distribution stuff through Heroes World. So that meant every other distributor, of which there were literally dozens,
yep,
suddenly had a huge percentage of their sales go away.
Yep.
So it's like, well, what do we do? And there was a bit of a scrambling going on. There was definitely consolidation and stuff. Diamond and Capital were two of the other big distributors, or the big distributors at the time. And they started snapping up exclusives, you know,
yep.
Who gets Image, who gets, I forget which other publishers were around at the day, but when it came down to Diamond getting DC, that was the deciding factor, you know, not necessarily instantly, but within really short order, because now another huge chunk of sales was taken away from everybody else.
Well, and they bought Diamond and all that, didn't they buy Capital or merge with Capital or something in that deal or consume Capital?
After they got the exclusive with Diamond, I mean, that was pretty much the death knell for Capital. And it was, again, prior to that, a ballpark, roughly even competitor with Diamond and such. But having lost Marvel, having lost DC, I mean, imagine again, if you've got, you know, now 10% of the volume of business you used to have.
No, absolutely.
Yeah. So, Diamond basically took, and I forget the exact nature of the deal, if they bought them out or if it was technically a merger or whatever. But yeah, they absorbed Capital and stuff. And I think it generally seemed to work out well for pretty much everybody.
But my point is that was also before as much air freight and shipping.
Well, and again, this would have been mid-90s. So yeah.
Yeah. So it was, I mean, it wasn't, you know, we aren't talking back before air freight, but we're still weren't quite in the overnight two-day shipping world that we're in now either.
Oh, far from it, yeah.
And so let's just assume there's another distributor that could pop up with the resources tomorrow and carry everything diamonds.
Which, even if we said, okay, there is another company that had the size, the resources, and the infrastructure, there are still the exclusive deals with the publishers.
But even if you get rid of all of that.
What I'm saying, you would have to.
I understand that. Okay, but let's assume all that stuff's gone. What other than possibly a West Coast distribution house would another distributor's advantage be? What, you know, if you're your mom and pop local store and you're buying everything from Diamond and someone else comes to you essentially offering you the same deal with just a different name on the business card, what's your incentive to change and how does that help the whole industry?
The way I think it helps the whole industry is, in addition to hearing stories from creators of how hard it is to get something in the previews, I've heard similar stories on how, and I cannot speak to the frequency of this, because the last time I was in the retail space was in the late 80s, so before all of that, but of the way the books get packed from Diamond being damaging to the books. I've heard reports of people getting an empty box with a packing slip saying, yep, it's an empty box, or things just broken on delivery and things like that. So I think there is an opportunity to be had of another distributor of the comics actually coming in better condition and things like that. Now, as to how widespread this is, I honestly don't know. It could be just a couple of retailers saying sour grapes or something of, you know, they had one bad shipment or whatever. It could be a little bit more widespread. It could be very widespread. I don't know. But the fact that there is no option for a retailer to tell Diamond, well, you know, either fix this or I'm going elsewhere.
No, I agree. In theory, I'm all in favor of competition. I'm just not sure in this case how much it would really change.
I get that. I think for it to even be an option, the other distributor would have to carry all of the publishers, because part of the problem around the distribution wars era was your discount is based on volume,
of course,
and if suddenly half your volume has to go to Heroes World or a third of it or whatever you're doing through Marvel,
you lose your discount
on both sides of the fence. Now if you've got to split it between two other distributors for DC and everything else or whatever, plus there's the incremental cost of the order forms, tracking the orders, unpacking the orders, all of that logistics, which is, you know, a nuisance, if nothing else. Plus, okay, you've gotten your books. It's a day or two later. You're looking, well, geez, I need to reorder this, that, and the other. Okay, I've got to call this person to reorder this other person to reorder those, and this other person to reorder that stuff.
Yeah, no. I guess that's kind of my point. I think, you know, missed shipments, bad packing, damages, a certain percentage of that is going to happen. I don't care who the distributor is.
Absolutely. There's no perfection. I get that.
And I guess the only thing, again, other than cheaper shipping for a West Coast house, I can't see anything else anyone could offer, even if they had anybody. And as far as your thing about it's hard to get into previews for smaller guys, at some point, the new distributor would go to the same thing, because if it's not worth Diamond's time to sell 1,000 of your books, it's not going to be worth both distributors' time to sell 500 of your books.
Yeah, it may make it even harder to get into the catalogs. Absolutely. But there's at least not one gatekeeper.
Yeah, that is the advantage.
But it's theoretical advantages, and it's something that we don't need another distributor to get these resolved. And I know that Diamond's always trying to improve how they do business and stuff like that. So, you know,
I guess that's the biggest thing. I guess Diamond's incentive to get better or more efficient is very small. And that's what another distributor would provide, is incentive to do better.
Well, but incentive, I'm not sure and ideas. Change. Well, yeah, materially, I agree. It's not going to change. But I do think having two competing forces under different management, different companies, etc., forces different business models, whether it's intentional or just happens that way. I mean, look at Marvel and DC.
Yeah, they're absolutely.
They're both playing the same game, but they're playing it along very different ideologies.
Yeah.
And having one have an upswing at one point while the other's having, you know, a hard time or whatever is good for the industry. And I think if there was another distributor out there, maybe they'd have a whole different approach to pre-ordering. Maybe they would do a catalog. Maybe they do it online. Maybe they wouldn't do it at all. Maybe, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Whereas the incentive for Diamond to change is negligible.
Yeah. That, like I said, that is the one thing. It would be the driver. It would be the incentive to improve faster would be the advantage. But I'm not sure the end result would be much different.
Well, and would it be a sufficiently worthwhile thing to get enough comic stores to cut over to the other company?
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully they would be doing it for an advantage, not just out of finally there's somebody else we can deal with, you know, kind of a thing.
Well, like I said, let's just assume, you know, you can make a magic wand, kind of like the Ma Bell breakup, and they just split Diamond in two. And half the stores go to one, half go to the other. They all carry the same stuff tomorrow. I'm not sure if in 5 years anything changes that wouldn't have changed if there was only one, I guess is what I'm saying.
I'm seeing that as a slightly different case, and I would say the industry would change and not for the better in that case.
Yeah, okay.
Because you would take a functioning company, split it in half.
Yeah.
You know, the person who's really good at fulfilling orders or putting together previews or whatever aspect of things is going to go to one of those two companies.
Yep.
Maybe the number two guy is just as good. Maybe they're not.
Yeah.
But now they've doubled. I mean, the two catalogs have to get produced. So it doubles the overhead on the industry at a distributor level for no noticeable gain.
Yeah.
No guaranteed gain at the very least.
Anyway, just something to think about. I know that there's kind of this mantra, oh, Diamond's monopoly is hurting the industry. And I'm like, the more I thought about it, I went, you know, I'm anti-monopoly myself and pro-competition. But in this particular case, I'm not sure what the benefit would be.
Yeah, I'm kind of anti-monopoly on principle, but it's also one of those things where I would be kind of hard-pressed to name anything over the now 20-plus years that Diamond's been the distributor where I felt they have either abused that position or significantly damaged the industry or something of the sort.
Yeah, exactly.
There's room for improvement, no question about it. If they've ever shipped an empty box to anybody, it's like, come on. But to me, that's something they should be improving regardless.
And again, that stuff happens. But
yeah.
There are worse companies where it happens more with, but I've never worked in the comics industry, but I've received distributor shipments like that. Or, you know, eight boxes with seven of them having product and one just having the packing list in it. And, you know, stuff like that just happens.
Yeah, there are times you get a package or whatever and you're like, really, come on.
Yeah, exactly.
And splitting Diamond, having another distributor or whatever, is no guarantee that wouldn't start happening even worse at both.
Yeah, exactly.
Because depending where they're located, somebody could say, well, you know, I'm not doing too well at Diamond, I'm going to move over to the other company and just bounce back and forth or something. So there's no magic solution to this. But it's also not a problem that is so serious or even necessarily even a problem.
Exactly.
You know, it's a philosophically not ideal situation, but in reality, we're getting the sales data faster than we ever had. Books are getting to the stores. I think at worst, previews may have been a week late once or twice over the 20 years. Or, you know, it's not like there have been any systemic major structure, the company's just not working. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They've been amazingly robust and have probably been the saving grace for the industry in so much as they're a centralized place to kind of either extend or not extend credit to publishers, to retailers, and so forth. Whereas potentially if you had multiple distributors, you could have people trying to game the system somehow that way.
Yeah, and I know we talked about it a couple of months ago, and the guys over at the Cowcast kind of picked up on it and talked about it on one of their... I guess the one thing that competition might breed is Diamond has no incentive to help out with better credit terms right now. But on the other hand, it's a tough industry. It might not be a wise decision to extend more credit anyways.
Yeah, I would argue it probably isn't a wise idea to extend more credit.
Yeah.
That just, if Diamond were to get into a bind because of that, that would collapse the industry. And to me, that would be the saving grace or the rationale or the benefit to the industry of a second distributor is it removes a single point of failure.
Yeah, also true.
But it also doubles the chance of failure because now you've got two smaller companies, yada, yada.
Yeah.
It's just nice that it's something that's a theoretical problem, not a, geez, this really needs to get solved.
Yeah.
Because Diamond is not perfect, but I think the people at Diamond are cognizant of where they've got room for improvement and are striving to improve. Again, I've watched the industry for multiple decades, lived through the entire, you know, distribution wars and stuff like that, saw how it fundamentally changed the industry and such, And had Diamond wanted to take dictatorial control over the industry or whatever, they certainly could have and been very selective as, I mean, if and when they had were to decide, hey, we're not carrying a publisher, that publisher, I mean, lives or dies based on that by and large.
Yeah, no. The only thing that I always do find interesting, and as long as I can remember, it's only changed once, and that was IDW. It would be interesting to know what the rules are for becoming a premier publisher. And if some of those companies like Dynamite and Boom and Oni not made that jump because they weren't allowed to, or have they not met criteria to get there, or et cetera, et cetera.
I've heard different things over the years. I would almost argue that maybe the catalog, if it were to change structure, should have a premier section for Marvel and DC, kind of that middle tier section for Image, Dark Horse, IDW, Dynamite, Boom, Titan, Valiant, maybe Zenoscope, and then kind of the more boutique publishers or whatever that are more, you know,
the small shops,
Abstract Studios, that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I will say this. It is interesting. IDW and Dark Horse and Image, obviously, are premier publishers and kind of, but those other ones you mentioned, while they aren't in the premier section, at least, and I haven't looked at a previous catalog in a couple of years, they almost had their own little premier section in that everybody else section.
They had a section, they had their own design aspect to it, etc. It's not like they were just the standard listing of the
exactly
postage stamp cover in the text blurb that a lot of other, the default listing, if you will.
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of my point. So there is kind of an in-between tier already.
I guess I would just go with the grouping a little differently, but I mean, it doesn't really matter that much. I do think it kind of benefits in one or two respects the smaller publishers to be in the back half versus being sandwiched in between all of the other publishers, because it would be easy to, you know, just kind of miss the, oh, here was the half page section for Chapter House, you know, right before Dark Horse or between Dark Horse and DC for another publisher, you know, whatever.
Well, like I said, I think the one that would be the biggest winner in a scenario where they could go premier is if Boom were to and become the first thing in the catalog, it would probably be a significant help to them.
Yeah, I could see that.
Because they seem to be in alphabetical order in the premiere section. So, like I said, if Boom, purely by the luck of their name, happened to become a premiere publisher, they'd become the first thing instead of Dark Horse.
I am going to toss out one thing that'll seem like a counterexample, but it does prove your point of the alphabeticalness. Uh-huh. And that's when Black Bull was at the tail end of the premiere publisher section.
Mm.
Because it was Wizard.
Oh, yeah.
That was their comic section. But it's, I'd like to see things get a little bit more, I guess, egalitarian or something, to where it's not so much that the mechanics of the system are favoring the already successful. I certainly don't want Marvel or DC to get penalized in any way or disadvantaged or whatever, but it would be nice to have the system set up to where it's not like the other publishers feel like they're relegated to the back of the bus. Because I really think that the bread and butter for comics is definitely the premier publishers, but the spice, the flavoring, the things that may keep people just coming back every week, that's what's the stuff hidden in the back half of previews.
Yeah.
That's where the growth potential is.
And like I said, because of the IDW example, which I think was the first one,
mm-hmm.
It is shown there is a way to do it. I don't know what it is, but there is a way to get from the back to the front.
I think it was a matter of having to had sales over, at the time it might have been 5% unit in dollars or whatever for a long time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Show you're of a certain size.
Absolutely. And again, I know this goes way back to the distributor wars in the very early days of this monopoly. If I could make one change, and again, since I don't really read the previews catalog, it's not that big a deal. But if I could make one change, I'd get rid of that stupid Marvel separate book and put them in the catalog with everybody else.
That's definitely a holdover from the distributor wars. Marvel got their own catalog when they took over. They bought Heroes World and self-distributed.
Yep.
And they didn't want to give that up when they moved back to Diamond.
Yeah, no, and I understand their side why they would, but just as a, you know, when I did occasionally buy the previews, I was, oh yeah, I got to go get this separate. Oh, okay, yeah. It would be so much easier to pick up one book.
Okay, devil's advocate here. We're seeing a slump, I think, on Marvel in terms of sales of individual titles. They're making up for it by doing so many comics.
Yep.
Is it possible that if their stuff was in the main previews catalog, maybe people might be a category of people, because not everybody uses previews, but that category that does, could they become more aware of it? Or are they just kind of saying, well, you know, I'm not into Marvel right now, so I'm not even going to flip through this other catalog?
There's a part of me that would say in a vacuum, yes, but I think if you're enfranchised enough that you're reading the previews catalog or using it, you're just used to it, and it's just the way it is.
Fair enough. I too would like them to be in the main previews catalog, but the thing's already like over 600 pages, even after they went through a period of trying to trim it down. It's much like how I trim my comic list, which is to say highly ineffectively. But you add another 100 pages or whatever for Marvel, and it's like, come on.
But at that point, 600 to 700 pages doesn't seem like that big a difference as opposed to another 100-page pamphlet.
Yeah.
I'm not sure where the breaking point is, but I think the previews is big enough already that it's in that close to a phone book size that I'm not sure that extra content would overall change. It's basically a phone book.
No, you're right. You're right. I am of the opinion, though, that the formatting of previews pages, not just for Marvel and DC, but more also as much so for those other publishers you were calling out that have their own kind of quasi section in the back half. Some of those, it's confusing as to, is this a house ad versus is this the actual solicit and whatnot?
Yes.
And I am hyper aware of this because there are times where when I'm putting together like the preview spotlight, I name all the clips if they're not already, and most people name them this way, which helps a lot, with the page number and previews. So I can then sync it up with my Excel file, which generates the show notes, and it's like, oh, well, you know, I got everything.
And sometimes they list the page of the ad, not the page of the solicit.
Yeah. And I'll be honest, sometimes I get it wrong, and it's just unclear. I mean, it's again, first world problems, and I get it. But when you've got some stuff that feels to be listed twice, and particularly when a publisher had that and then cuts away from it like Titan did a while back, within the last year or so, it just gets a little confusing. And it's hard to tell where some of the solicits are. But, you know, that's just the industry we live in.
It is. It is. Want to move on to the actual list?
Let's do that. We had some interesting stuff this time around.
A lot of interesting stuff, I think.
Let's start with what topped the list, and then we'll go talk about the bestseller, because I think there's some discussion to be had about that. The number one ranked item on the list was Secret Empire number 0 at 162,718 units. Read it, enjoyed it. Not so much with the first issue, but this one I really enjoyed. This was one of those that, like many, many Marvel things, just they're going nuts with the variant covers to the point of absolute absurdity.
Does this one have a million?
I'm pulling up my notes on, oops, hang on. I didn't pull up the number of variants on that one, but like some of the other stuff that we'll get to had like 6 or 7 variants and such. And it's just, you know, the way I figure this out is, you know, cause right now I'm doing it still kind of manually. I haven't gotten the new system up and running totally, but I'll go to the retailer order form for the month. I'll go find that item. And then I'll copy the, you know, 16 lines or whatever for the thing. And in the case of Secret Empire number 0, it's got, let me pull this into the other file, because then I do that and get it, reformat it slightly to where it's easier to kind of compare these things. It had 3 covers. It had a regular cover. It had an A cover and a B cover. And the A cover... I'm sorry, I did that wrong. It had 4 covers, because that's not confusing. It had a regular cover, a variant cover, and then an A variant and a B variant, because, yeah, whatever. One of them, so you got the regular cover. The Torque B variant, you could order all you want of this variant, so open to order. Always got to love those. The Friends variant, I think that's Ron Friends, the artist. Could be wrong about his first name. I'm bad with names. Anyways, they could order 1 variant for every 20 of the regular they purchased. And then for the Rice variant, it's a 1 in 50.
Okay.
For Marvel, actually, that's not too bad.
No.
You know, it's 4 covers that they had to go commission, a little bit of extra work here and there, production value-wise. Nothing too crazy, though.
Yeah.
We'll get to the crazy when we hit, like, you know, Venom and a few things like that. So again, that was the item that topped the list. Good sales, robust sales, good sign for a start of a Marvel event.
And that's a zero, so normally you would expect the one to actually be a little higher.
Yes, and I would expect one to be higher. It's two I'm wondering about, and maybe it's just I didn't like number one. Maybe it'll work better for everybody else. I'm a little concerned in so much as if you look at rank 51, we've got Captain America Steve Rogers number 16. Mm-hmm. And then down at rank 58, we got number 15. So it did go up with 16. But the Captain America Steve Rogers, I mean, he's the focal character of this event. And both of these are selling, you know, in the case of number 15, 34,863 units. And with 16, it went up, let's see, 3,271 units. So about a little over, about 10.35% to, nope, hang on, I'm reading the wrong thing. That was the uptick on 15. The uptick on 16 was 7.18%, getting it up 2,503 units to 37,366 units. So under 38,000 units for the title or the lead character of the event while the event's kicking off after two upticks.
Is it related or is this now a lame duck title waiting for the whatever happens after this?
It is related.
Okay.
It is. He's not only a pivotal character, it's been the last 15, 16 issues of this title has been setting all of this up.
Well, yes, the last one, it's but still that way.
It's still that way.
Okay.
In this particular thing, in issue 16, everything has been leading to this moment, time for Cap to step out of the shadows, change the landscape of the Marvel Universe in a massive way. It's written by Nick Spencer, who's, of course, writing the event.
The event, yeah.
And again, we get the whole sort of a lead into also with number 15 there.
Yeah.
So it's not like he's the lead character in a disconnected story.
Yeah.
So when I see those sales, in other words, the title the event launched out of, and I don't mean essentially, I mean literally, that title couldn't get into the top 50. So little curious how this is going to play out.
That's an interesting point. It will be interesting to see.
Hopefully it does well. I love Captain America. I want this to be successful. I want a good Marvel event. I want them to end it well. We'll see what happens. Now, that was the top rank item. I mentioned we would also talk about the best-selling item. We're actually going to talk about two in this regard. At rank two, and people are thinking, you're talking rank two. By definition, that sold less than rank one. Well, give me a sec. We have Batman number 21. This is the lenticular edition, the funky little move, the cover sort of a thing. It did 130,216. I can already hear people yelling, that's less than the 162,000. How could it possibly have sold more? Well, you've also got to consider at rank 7 that Batman number 21, the non-lenticular covers, and again, multiple here, did another 89,256 units, which, what does that put the total
219,472.
Thank you for doing the math. Which, of course, is well above the 162,000 of Secret Empire. Worth noting, there were at least four covers for this.
Yep.
There was the regular cover, the lenticular cover, the international cover, and I'm thinking there was another one. And I'm having to guess on this because this is one of those 9,000 series codes, which I guess they do maybe now for pre-orders or something crazy, which means technically this was never actually listed in previews, even though it had a house ad. So this is the sort of thing that just drives me up the wall, but you know, what you gonna do? The correct answer is you're going to read it and enjoy it. It's been an amazing story so far.
And I do want to point out, we do have Batman number 20 on this same list at rank 6, 97,544. So still below 100,000, but slightly up from issue 19 that we talked about being the first one below 100,000 last month.
2 months ago. I think last month both issues were under 100,000.
Okay. So whatever. There have been several under 100,000 then.
I think the title is still slipping.
Yep.
I know on the Slack channel, Drew kind of added the two numbers together and said, you know, that puts to rest the Batman is slipping sort of a thing.
Mm-hmm. And it is over 200,000.
Well, I think it's premature to say that puts to rest that Batman is slipping.
That I agree with.
This is a major story in the meta arc for DC with Rebirth. I think it really comes down to, with issue 23, the first post-the-button story for Batman, how are sales? Yeah. I'm expecting them to be around 90,000-ish, give or take.
Mm-hmm.
If it basically falls right back in line, which I expect it has a good chance of doing.
It'd be about 96.5.
It could be even, 85,000. It's hard to say. Typically what happens, not necessarily typically, but in most of the cases I've looked at, you've got a definitive trend line on the title.
Mm-hmm.
You have this kind of, normally it would be an event crossover, but essentially it is the event. You get the bump, but then afterwards the title drops almost always right back to the trend line. So whether that'll happen this time or not, I don't know. I don't know off the top of my head what's slated to be in issue 23. I could probably look it up in a minute if I wanted to. But it seems to me like this is a bump that's happening for the duration of the Button storyline. Those two issues, the variant cover, all that thrown together. And the odds of carryover are questionable. Not saying it won't happen. Not saying it can't happen. But most cases, it usually doesn't.
Yeah.
So if it does, and this gets Batman back over the 100,000 and it's back on stable footing, awesome. I am all for that. I just, to say that it went up because of an event and, all is right with the sales of Batman and stuff. And let me be clear. When I say all is not necessarily right with the sales of Batman, yeah, it dropped under 100,000. It's still the best ongoing selling title by a huge margin. So it's not like it's hurting in any way, shape, or form. It's just not at the King of the Hill rock solid position it had been in during the whole New 52 era.
Yeah.
And it disappoints me that it's lost its footing in any way, shape, or form. And if it can regain it, awesome. The other title that outsold Secret Empire but ranked lower because of the different price points for the lenticular edition and the non-lenticular editions is, of course, Flash 21. It's at rank 5. Its lenticular edition did 107,037 units. Its non-lenticular covers is at rank 11, and that's at the $299 price point with 67,766 units.
For a total of 174,803.
So above Secret Empire, but not like leaps and bounds, but good margin.
Yeah.
What's different about this is the regular cover of Flash went up considerably, whereas that didn't happen for Batman. The regular cover still slid on Batman. But if we go to rank, where is the other Flash on here? It's in here somewhere. Unless I'm misremembering, it went, oh, there it is, at rank 25.
There it is, yep, 25. 53,828 for issue 20.
So the non-lenticular covers was, that was up nearly 26%, 25.89% to the tune of 13,938 units.
And it was basically flat to 19. I mean, it was down slightly, but less than 100 units.
So it got an event level bump, and it had that lenticular edition that sold through the roof, comparatively. Yep. So, more people are getting Batman than Flash.
Flash was the big winner on this.
Oh, yeah. Well, I like to think the readers were so far. I mean, I haven't read the final part of it. Drew and I are going to review that. But the other thing is the international covers by, who did those international covers? Michael, I forgot his name, Jensen or something like that.
And those are the ones minus the smiley face button, right?
And man, they look awesome.
Yeah.
So.
And that was a copyright issue, correct?
Yes, it was. A trademark issue, I think.
Trademark, yeah.
In the rest of the world.
The Smiley Corporation owns the happy face.
Yeah. I had it backwards in my mind for a second, but yeah. It's yeah. Intellectual property law is always an intriguing topic. So, obviously, the Button is doing rather well for DC. That added, just through those lenticular covers, a significant bump in sales. Not quite a quarter million, but close enough. You add in the bump on Flash, we'll say it's roughly the quarter million. They'll probably get that same benefit next month. Next month, we'll see the flip side, where in this case, it went up for the half of the Button. It'll have the Button and then do whatever it does. I am expecting both titles to kind of go back to their basic trend line.
Yeah.
Flash more likely to benefit than Batman, I think for a couple of different reasons. One, it was the lower selling title. Two, there's one or two aspects about the actual story that may benefit that character more than Batman. Don't know yet.
Interesting. I would predict the exact opposite.
I don't know.
Your reasoning is perfectly sound. My reasoning is Batman is still Batman. The more people that try Batman, the more people that are continue to read Batman.
That's fair. I could counter slightly that Flash has a TV show and Batman's is under the name Arrow, so that might confuse people. No, I'm kidding.
No, Batman's under the name Gotham.
That's true. That's true. So I'm still way behind on that show.
It's really good. It has replaced Flash as my personal favorite comic book show on television.
I can understand that. Flash I'm still loving, but it's not at its high point.
And neither is Arrow, which I'm also enjoying. Maybe more than Flash, but again, I don't think it's at its high point.
Yeah. Items at rank 3 and 4. These are kind of...
You know, these are impressive, and this is an important thing to talk about, too.
Yeah, we got X-Men Gold at rank number 3, 114,332 units. $4.99 cover price for the first issue. And that came out on April 5th. The following week, X-Men Blue number 1 came out, 108,839 units. Gold had Kitty Pryde, Storm, Colossus, Nightcrawler, Old Man Logan, Prestige, which is the new name of the Rachel Gray Marvel Girl or whatever character name you want to give her. And X-Men Blue is essentially what was the all-new X-Men of Marvel Girl, Cyclops, Beast, Iceman, Angel, the teenage versions that were plucked from time and stuck in the current Marvel Universe. Strong launch. Not, oh my god, amazing, but solid.
Well, and to be fair, the better-selling one, X-Men Gold, also had the artist controversy attached to it.
Yes, it did. And that was a shame, because I thought he was a really good artist, but for him to feel the need to put, you know, political messages or whatnot in the book, and particularly ones that I didn't even think remotely fit the characters he kind of tagged them to or whatever.
Well, the Kitty Pryde surrounded by a bunch of anti-Semitic symbols, yeah.
I was thinking, actually, the T-shirt for Colossus.
Yeah, and then not that... That he might have got away with.
It was, having known about the controversy, when I saw that, I actually, you know, hit Wikipedia or Google and looked it up or whatever, because it's like, well, this means something. Because there were a few others where it was just a number or something in the background, and I'm like, really?
Yeah.
Anyways, shame it's got the controversy. That artist is already done issues 2 and 3. After that, they're replacing him. The second issue of X-Men Gold is down at rank 16, having lost 45.52%, which is to the tune of 52,049 units, even though that second issue is only $3.99 compared to the $4.99. Pretty noticeable drop.
But under 50%, which can't be said for Blue at rank 24.
Now, granted, that was 50.32% of a drop for X-Men Blue, so still over half. But, you know, when you're selling 54,074 units, having just lost 54,765 units. Yeah. But this comes back to Marvel is just... The second issue drops, in my mind, are reflective of the over-promotion, or the heavy promotion, I should say, of the first issues. Not necessarily that people are, you know, reading them, not liking them, and bailing or anything of the sort. These decisions are made before the readers even get into the equation in any way, shape, or form.
And I will say this, as long as we are discussing X-Men Blue and Gold, I do think it's interesting when you get into readers and possible interest in the title. All the way down at rank 167, essentially the zero issue for the year, do you have 1,200 units of reorder activity for X-Men Prime.
We also have reorder activity for Inhumans Prime.
Yes.
So I think that's a sign that there is interest in this relaunch of the two franchises. I think that's a good thing. The question is, are people going to be satisfied or not with the relaunches? Gut feeling is they probably will be. I don't, as a reader, see anything kind of remotely objectionable about what they're doing with these properties.
Well, here's, and again, this becomes my silly question. As someone not reading these, are these the X-Men relaunches, or do the X-Men get relaunched with everything else after Secret Empire in another 5 months?
Okay, that's I'm going to say that's a trick question. Yes, okay. These are the relaunches. Will they also get relaunched again? I hope not, but yeah, maybe.
Well, because Marvel has already said they're kind of relaunching everything after Secret Empire, right? I'm just wondering if X-Men won't be included in that since it's being done now.
I expect that they may go legacy numbering and not fully relaunch, but sort of relaunch.
Yeah.
It's with Marvel, it's really anybody's guess. And I don't think the problem is the numbering. I don't think it's, you know, do Do we need another first issue? Do we need the older number? Anything of that sort. I think they just need to tell better stories and have kind of a continuity and a take on the characters that lasts longer than, you know, half a year or something.
The other thing I wanted to ask you about are a couple of these True Believers. There's a dollar True Believers Giant Size X-Men number one. Is that simply a reprint of Giant Size X-Men number one?
What rank is that?
91.
91. It is... I'd have to actually go check the solicit on that. I'm not sure. And the solicit I've got here just says it's a reprint of it. I think it is just a reprint. I don't follow the True Believers.
It is an amazing testament to how important that book is 30 plus years later that a reprint, even at a dollar, still sells over 25,000 issues and makes the top 100.
Well, it's also...
Not to mention a book that's probably been reprinted in a dozen or more trades as well.
Yeah. But in addition to being just a pivotal issue for that franchise and a clear defining moment for it, I mean, those are the X-Men to a lot of people.
Yeah. And actually, I say 30. It's over 40 years now. Wow.
I mean, that was when Claremont was really just starting out on the franchise and doing what would become not just one of the hallmark runs of that title, but I would say a hallmark run of the Marvel Universe or really any superhero universe.
Absolutely.
And the fact that it's got such legs in terms of sales or whatever, it's a damn good read. You know, it's a product of its time. Certain things age a little better than other aspects or whatever.
And Claremont loved his thought bubbles, but with Charles, it makes sense.
Yes. The almost forced diversity aspect or whatever, you could argue how well that ages or whatever, but it's a great jumping on point.
It is. As someone who recently went back there and read about the next 120 issues, it is the place to start.
Yeah.
The other thing I want to ask about, and again, I don't know if you have this information or the solicits, at rank 183 and 198 are $1 True Believers, X-Men Blue and X-Men Gold. I'm assuming these are not reprints of the $4.99 books higher on the list.
That is correct. I believe they're reprinting things that set up the characters.
Okay.
But again, I would have to verify that. The True Believer stuff is I think, something that they want to have out there to where if people are coming in off a movie, off a TV show, whatever, they can point them to that and say, you know, see, this is some wonderful stuff. In the case of X-Men Blue reprinting the X-Men 1991 number one issue, that seems a little odd. I don't know that that's what I would have necessarily reprinted there. And Gold is doing 281 from Uncanny X-Men, which also feels like a bit of an odd pick for that. I don't think either is as maybe the number one from 91, but I don't think either is as iconic
Jim
as...
Lee, that's the Jim Lee number one, right?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, that is a pretty iconic book.
And I'm thinking 281 is when Professor X could walk again or something.
Oh, yeah, okay.
But I could be a little off on that.
And then there is an Astonishing X-Men, which we don't have to get into, True Believer as well on this list.
Yeah, I mean, they've got a ton of it, and it makes sense to give people kind of jumping on points to tempt them to various trades or whatever. If we go back to Blue and Gold for a second, part of why they had those huge drops, as we talked about, was variant covers. X-Men Blue number one had two 1 in 10 variants, a 1 in 25 variant, a 1 in 50 variant, a 1 in 1,000 variant, and two that you could order whatever you wanted of, provided you ordered 200% of your orders for IVX number two with the regular cover of X-Men Blue number one.
That makes it clear as mud.
Yeah, it does. Now, for comparison, the second issue of X-Men Blue had a regular cover and a Ramos variant that was a 1 in 25.
Okay, that's simple.
So you've gotten rid of...
1 in 25 I can wrap my brain around.
But that gets rid of the two 1 in 10s, the 1 in 50, the 1 in 100, or 1 in 1,000, and the other two.
Yeah.
When you've got to start looking up your orders on past stuff to see if you're going to hit 200 or whatever... and the way they stack these things with the variants, because like with X-Men Gold, it had one 1 in 10, a 1 in 25, a 1 in 50, a 1 in 1,000, and again, two of those meet or exceed your orders of IVX number 2, except for this one, they had to do 250% of their orders. And then again, X-Men Gold number 2 also had just the one 1 in 25 cover. But when they take when they do things like the 1 in 10, the 1 in 25, the 1 in 50 and stuff, essentially what they're trying to set up is a incentive ladder, if you will. Well, if I'm getting 9, if I just get the other 1, I can go order this other, so they've gotten 2 new sales, and have a variant I can sell at a markup, okay? You know, but then, when you get to the point, well, I've gotten 20, now if I just order another few, I can get to that 25, at which point I'm not that far from, you know, depending how they stagger these, there's always that next incentive that's like, well, maybe I just go for that.
Well, even the 25, even if you can't go to the 50, you might think, well, I can go to the 30 and get one extra of the 1 in 10.
Or if it's X-Men Gold, one extra of each of the 1 in 10s.
Yeah.
So there's, again, that trying to get you to nudge your order just a little bit more. And I get it, but this is why we see the sharp drops on second issues at Marvel. You know, they heavily promote first issues, and they do almost a token promotion on issues after that.
Since we were just kind of talking about how we expect it possibly to go up, do you happen to have the order information for that Secret Empire number 1? How nuts did they go with that?
Give me
particularly
just
as compared to the 0 that's on this list at 162.
Oh yeah, this will be fun. I've got the, because of the release schedule, the March previews had issues 1, 2, and 3.
Okay.
So give me a second as I reformat this. The way the retailer order form kind of comes, the notes are on a second line. So what I tend to do is a quick reformatting to put them on the same line as the item that they're for. Just, it makes things a lot more readable for me. And then I line up the end of the variant stuff to where I've got all the notes kind of in sync.
Gotcha.
It sounds horribly exciting or whatever, but it's one of those things that when you've got 9 variants for the first issue, you kind of need to get to where you can do a quick reshuffling based on, is this a 1 in 25? Is it a 1 in a bazillion or what have you? Now, I think the frequency of the event is going to probably help them more than hurt them if they can actually release stuff on time. Because I think with a lot of Marvel events, there comes a point where it's like, geez, are you guys going to ever end this?
Well, how many of these issues are there?
It's a 9, well, it's 1 of 9.
All right.
I was going to say it was a 9-issue series, so it's probably a 12.
Yeah, I was going to say, by the time 7 comes out, 8's going to be 3 months late, and they're going to add 4 more books to it?
I hope not, but given past events, yes.
This is the cynicism Marvel has bred that I don't think... all it's going to take is one clean, and I think a lot of it will go away.
And who knows? Maybe this will be that one.
Maybe it will.
But that's incredibly optimistic for us to think, given their past track record. All right, so I've gotten this to where do a quick sort of these based on requirements for them. This actually isn't as bad as I was afraid of.
Okay, so they again put all the work into number 1, and then it didn't get as crazy.
Well, the 0 issue,
yep,
has go back to my other file. It had again the 1 in 20, the 1 in 50, the order all you want of this, and then the regular cover.
Yeah.
So that seems reasonable.
Not crazy.
Not crazy. The first issue has a total of 9 covers, including the regular. One of them, the Sorrentino Hydra Heroes variant, is order all you want of this. So open to order. Okay, cool.
So they've got an open to order variant. So that's 2 regular covers, essentially.
No. The difference is when we get to the order X percent of.
Yeah.
It's of the regular, not also of this Hydra Heroes variant.
Fair enough.
Okay. We've got one that's a 1 in 25, another that's a 1 in 50. Then we start hitting the order X percent of, meet or exceed X percent of. In this case, it's Civil War 2 number 8 is the title to meet or beat for pretty much all of the percentages ones.
Okay.
One of the covers is 150% or more. 2 of the covers are 175% or more. And 2 of them are 200% or more.
So if you get the 200% or more of
Civil War 2 number 8.
You can order all you want of all of these except the 1 in, and then there's a 1 in 25 and a 1 in 50.
Yes.
Okay.
For issue 2, there's the regular cover, another Hydra Heroes variant, open to order, what you want, whatever you want to call that. There's a 1 in 50. The 1 in 50s are J.S. Campbell, covers. And actually the incentives for issues 2 and 3 are in parallel. Both have a regular issue. Both have the open to order. Both have the J.S. Campbell 1 in 50. Both have one that if you order 150% of Civil War 2 number 8, you can order whatever you want of. And then another one, in this case, the Christopher action figure variant, if you order 175% of the Civil War 2 number 8, you can order whatever you
want. Oh, so they're really basing everything off Civil War 2 number 8.
For this month, yes.
Well, for the next event, essentially. Essentially for issues 1, 2, and 3 of the next event, it's all based on ordering a larger percentage of the final book of the last event.
Pretty much. Wow. But keep in mind, these are every other week things.
Yep.
So, we go one more order catalog further, and we start to get the next set of issues, and those look to be... you called it. It's Civil War 2 number 8 again. Wow. That's surprising. I would have figured they would have...
So they want a 35 to 40% increase for them, which means a lot of stores having a 50% increase of the final issue of the last event.
Yeah, I think basically what I'm seeing for these other issues, I'm looking at 4 and 5 right now from the April previews. It looks more or less the same, open to order, 1 in 25. In this case, the percentages have dropped to 125% and 150 versus the 150 and 75. So they are expecting a little bit of a decrease there. But if I were a retailer, I would be obviously able to go pull my orders pretty easily for those past things. But frankly, a little annoyed that I had to keep doing that to order more stuff just to figure out where the breakpoints were.
Yeah.
The amount of math retailers have to do for some of the Marvel events these days is just, if you're not comfortable with a spreadsheet and you want to be a retailer, I think you should take a course in Excel. And I'm not going to say it'll pay for itself. I suppose that depends how much you pay for the course. But it certainly seems like it'd be wildly beneficial. And for that matter, if there are any retailers out there that would like a little help on that kind of a stuff, I might be able to find the time to do that. No promises or whatever, but I can certainly see the need for it. Yeah, for issues 6 and 7 from the May, it's more or less the same, except we've also got some 1 in 50s actually for issues 4, 5, 6, and 7. They're trying to keep the incentives going, I think, as much as they can. Just to see if they can mitigate sales drop off.
Yeah.
Convinced that's going to work. I really think Marvel is so overusing variant covers that it is just insane.
I do think it's interesting that the big variant, in theory, the big money variant is the J. Scott Campbell one. And that's the one they're keeping at a 1 in X as opposed to an order all you want if you hit a percentage.
I think they kind of have to do it that way, because anyone that would hit that percentage in some of the larger stores could possibly do that.
They just order hundreds.
Exactly.
Yeah.
If you want to have that be that kind of, put the book on the wall, get a lot of money for it sort of, incentive variant, it's got to be an incentive.
Yeah, it can't be that common.
Yeah. But, I mean, this is just some of the variants for this time around. If we look at rank number, wherever Guardians of the Galaxy number 19 is, they're at rank 73.
Yep.
Final issue up 10, almost 11%, 10.83%. So that's a 2,934 unit increase, getting it back above 30,000. So 30,028 units. Not only was that the final issue, not only was that by Bendis, not only was that extra sized, it had a 1 in 50, a 1 in 25, a best Bendis moments variant, order all you want. And my personal favorite for the most nonsensical, this is an order as many as you want variant. It's the final issue variant. The series is ending, whichever cover you get. What on earth does a final issue variant mean? I don't get that.
And my personal favorite, it's also a dollar more, which is where Marvel gets to say, see, we told you people like more expensive books because it went up.
Well, this is the kind of thing that when you have an ending issue, it's not unheard of to get the uptick when they're doing the big wrap up. But yeah, so charge more.
Yeah. But and then they go, see, people buy more if we increase the price.
Well, again, the Guardians of the Galaxy 2 movie is out.
Also came out, yep.
So what better way
to... I'm not saying I agree with it, but Bendis did make that comment a number of years ago, and I, for one, won't forget it.
No, and nor should you. Bring it up as often as you want. It's a nice comment. In addition to that issue of Guardians of the Galaxy, and that came out, what week did that come out?
The 12th.
Next month's numbers, for May, and I've, actually, I don't think I've read this issue yet. We've already got all new Guardians of the Galaxy number one.
And then they're getting a relaunch after Secret Empire 2, right?
Well, hang on. We haven't finished this month of Guardians.
Oh, jeez.
So that new, all-new Guardians of the Galaxy number one has a 1 in 25, a 1 in 50, 3-order 250% of Guardians of the Galaxy number 13, order all you want. Okay, fine. There's a second issue that's coming out also in May that's a 1 in 25 and a regular cover. Plus, from the March order form, there's the Guardians of the Galaxy Mother Entropies number 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 of the weekly series from May, plus Guardians of the Galaxy Mission Breakout number 1. That has a 1 in 50 and a 1 in 10. The Mother Entropy, only the first issue has a 1 in 25. No other covers on any of the other issues. But if that's not enough Guardians of the Galaxy for you, don't worry. We've got Rocket. We've got I Am Groot, both of which have a plethora of incentives. And again, a lot of these are hitting in May. And it's like, if there's not enough here, let's just throw some more stuff out there. So what we're going to see is a bunch of titles doing, you know, better than arguably they should based on just the content because of how Marvel's heavily promoting with all the variant covers. And this is something that if you go through the retailer order form, heck, if you just go through the Marvel previews and, you know, you're flipping through pages, there is in some cases, a paragraph or whatever of here are the 6 or 7 variant covers. And collectability is there. I certainly have a ton of variant and incentive covers or whatever in my collection. I am not immune to this or whatever. Granted, it's been a while since I've really double dipped that often. But like with Infinite Crisis, yeah, I'd do some of that or whatever. They were cool covers. But that's a sales bump that's not a sales increase. And when you're doing so many of them for Marvel, that's, I think, where you get to the point where the average sales are frankly just kind of so-so for Marvel. You know, aside from X-Men Blue and Gold, you have for Marvel Star Wars number 30 doing 70,175. The first issue of Weapon X doing 68,874 units.
Is that Logan or a different Weapon X?
That's a team. Okay. And I would have to...
The point is Logan's not back yet.
Not yet.
Okay.
This one has, this has Old Man Logan, Sabretooth, Lady Deathstrike, Weapon, and I thought one or two others.
But the current day Logan is still deceased.
Yes.
Okay.
For how much longer is the question?
He's got to come back with the legacy numbering and all that, right?
Yes.
However, as long as we mention Weapon X number one, number two is down at rank 38, down 38.34%. All things considered, a relatively small drop for a second issue for Marvel at 42,471.
Let's lighten the mood a little bit in a strangely ironic way and talk about what may be one of the bestsellers next month.
Okay.
At rank 15, 14, we've got Venom number 6, 62,747 units. That is up 95.55%.
How did that happen?
That's a great question and one that I asked myself. Yeah. And it's one of those things where if you take a look at the solicits for some of these things, it's like, okay, it's a little bit crazy. In this case, this was a pivotal issue for the character and one that they had hyped as such with it's leading up to the next issue, which is issue 150. So this is one of the first titles to kind of flip back to the numbering. That's not the right term. This is one of the ones where they've decided a higher number is going to sell better, so let's see how high a number we can get. Well, that's what it was.
And make it a nice round one.
And make it a nice round number that we can also do some shenanigans on. So in this case, with Venom number 6 that we had this month, we had the regular cover. Okay, fine. We usually have that. That's not a particular big surprise. There was a meet or exceed 90% of your orders for Venom number 3 with the regular cover. Order as many as you want. Okay,
so,
that's...
So there's most of that 90% increase right there.
No, no. It's the other variant.
Which is?
A 1 in 1,000 variant.
Well, we know for a fact 62 stores or less took advantage of that.
Well, yeah. having read the issue, there is a definite story plot point that could make this one that has some collectability down the line, that has some importance potentially, or maybe not. But I think it's there's a little bit more going on than just cover gimmicks. But I think we're going to see potentially as big of a bump next month with 150.
Well, another 90% would get it to 120,000 plus.
Yeah.
Okay.
150 has a regular cover, meet or exceed 200% of Venom number 4 orders, 2 1-in-25s, a 1 in 100, a 1 in 500, another 1 in 1,000, and a 1 in 2,000.
Who's doing those 1 in 1,000s and 1 in 2,000s?
In the case of Venom number 6, it was a McFarlane Classic variant. In the case of 150, the 1,000 is a Bagley variant, and the 2,000 is a Bagley sketch variant. So presumably, Bagley did the sketch, saved that off, finished it, and that became the other one.
And is the McFarlane a new piece of artwork, or just an old piece they dug up?
I don't know.
That's crazy. When you said McFarlane Classic, I'm like, they just dug up an old poster or something, didn't they?
I would expect they used an old cover image, but I don't have what the cover looks like in front of me.
Yeah.
I honestly cannot keep track of all of these variants. It is not only insane, but there's just so many of them from Marvel.
Yeah.
I mean, again, we've got 7 or 8 on that Venom 150. We've got 2 here on the Venom 6. They have more variant covers than they have regular comics in Marvel solicits these days.
And as a fairly newly minted trade waiter, I got to tell you, the nice thing about the trade is for half the price, you get all the variants.
Yeah. If I were getting into comics now, one, I question if I would. And two, I think if I did, I would potentially be more likely to go for the trade. But I also question if I would go for the shared universes these days, because you don't get the intertwinedness as well, in my opinion. Or at least not the way I like it and stuff, on the trade side as you do in the regular covers, or the regular issues and such. But when I look at the Marvel lineup in particular, because that really stood out at me as I was doing my article this month, and I don't want to hammer on Marvel and stuff, they've got some great people there, they've got some very talented people there, but it just feels like they've got a... some of it feels a little uninspired, some of the decisions seem fundamentally questionable, and some of the titles seem to have such a confused or unclear identity. For example, rank number 27, the Ben Reilly Scarlet Spider number 1, 53,240 units, not to be confused with the Amazing Spider-Man, Spider-Man 2099, or Gwenpool, or Spider-Gwen, I mean. See, I even got that confused. There are so many spider people bouncing around the universe right now. I can't keep them all straight. And I'm reading these things.
It's funny. We had a rather interesting discussion based on you and Drew's review of the Ben Reilly issue on the Slack channel. And again, for anyone listening who's not on the forums or on the Slack channel, come join us and throw your 2 cents in on all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
About all the spider people and which ones are more interesting and less interesting. But I think a lot of that depends on where your interest in Spider-Man or what you consider your age of Spider-Man falls.
Yeah. Do you like him single? Do you like him married? Which kid would you want him to have? And it's funny, because when we have those conversations, you know, somebody asks, well, whatever happened to this character? And it's like, well, you know, I usually check Wikipedia to double check if my memory's not totally off.
I'm the one who went, whatever happened to Benji Parker?
Yeah. And at
and
first
you
I'm
found
like,
the answer.
At first I'm like, which Ben Parker is this again? I know it's not the Uncle Ben. Which one, you know, because there's
second baby.
So much confusion. There's so many characters around there.
Mayday's little sister.
Well, and Drew was confused as to, well, is Mayday the one in Renew Your Vows? It's not. That's Annie. Mayday is a different one from the MC2 universe. And to start to try to explain this stuff, you've got to kind of, almost in any case with a Marvel or DC character, if you're not having to pull in an alternate timeline or parallel world, you're probably just skimming over some details. It's, yeah. Trying to explain these things is just just crazy. And I think that's part of why some of these sales are just so-so.
Well, here's the amazing thing. As, again, you're talking, in this particular conversation, we're talking about a conversation John and I were having.
Mm-hmm.
I am a guy who read the first 400 issues of Spider-Man religiously, plus every spinoff, and sporadically read Spider-Man thereafter. And I'm needing an explanation. I can't imagine a total new person.
Well, and it's funny because I came in with, I guess, 252 with the black suit.
Oh, actually came in before you. How is that possible? Well, I mean, I read all the way back to one, but I mean, I think the first one I bought off the stands was about 195.
One of my early Marvel comics was the Fantastic Four issue. I think it was 207, 204, whichever one introduced Herbie.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And it was in the style of Kirby, but it was not Kirby. It might have been Herb Trimpy or whatever. It wasn't bad art, but it was an issue that just didn't really click with me. And for whatever reason, having watched the Super Friends and stuff like that, I gravitated more towards the DC characters.
Mm-hmm.
And it really, my entry ramp into the Marvel stuff was John Byrne on Fantastic Four, Hulk, Alpha Flight. I could get on a new number one at Marvel with Alpha Flight. That's awesome, you know? And then when Secret Wars happened, that kind of branched out, and that's when I started reading, like, Spider-Man and all the other stuff. So, latecomer to the Marvel Universe, I guess.
Dumb question, and I know it's not really related to numbers. As a DC fan, much like I was, but I was also a Spider-Man fan, mainly because of the cartoon with that great theme song.
Can't argue that.
How were you aware of John Byrne to be a John Byrne fan if you weren't reading any Marvel stuff to begin with?
He was the exception. He was the Marvel stuff I was doing. And I'm trying to remember what got me on his stuff. I think with the Fantastic Four, having read that one issue, I had had some digest side stuff that had reprinted some classic Fantastic Four stuff in black and white. So I was familiar with the characters, thought they were cool. And honestly, I'm trying to remember. It was just, Byrne has such a nice, clean art style that really, I mean, that's the style I gravitate towards.
You know, I love his art too, but I remember I found him when he was doing some issues of Marvel Team-Up, because again, back to the Spider-Man thing.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I followed into Fantastic Four and Hulk and stuff at the time, but yeah, I just, as a DC person, I'm not sure how you got there.
It may have also been that the grocery store my mom was getting the groceries from had more DC than Marvel or some such.
Or word of mouth. Some guy at the comic shop said, hey, have you seen this artist?
No, for me, this predates being a regular at a comic shop.
Fair enough.
So I think it was just characters I was familiar with or whatnot. And it's funny because I don't think it would have taken that big of a change in circumstance or whatever for me to have really started out as a Marvel fan, given this would have been around the time George Perez was doing the Avengers and stuff like that. So it just kind of happened that way.
Yeah. Okay, back to the list.
So Ben Reilly, Scarlet Spider, 53,000, not a huge impressive start. It had some variants. In this case, it was a 1 in 15, a 1 in 20, a 1 in 25. So again, they're stacking those, trying to get people to that next one. And then a meet or exceed 100% of Clone Conspiracy 2. You can order as much as you want of another variant, that being the Christopher Action Figure one. And those are kind of cool variants, I'll admit. If they did a comic that collected all the Christopher Action Figure variants, I'd pick that up.
You've said that before several times, that, hey, if they have a theme set of covers, if they just put them in a comic, you'd buy that.
Yes.
I wonder how long it is until someone tries it.
Longer than I would have expected, because I've said this many a times. And it seems like from a cost-benefit analysis, they've got the covers. They're not impacting the collectability of the other comics by doing this. All they've got to do is have somebody assemble them into a comic, slap a cover and a price on it, and solicit.
Since they essentially usually do that in the back matter of most trades, I wonder if they're worried that it would hurt trade sales. I wonder how many trade readers buy the – or not trade readers, trade purchasers – purchase them just to get the collection of variants?
Excellent question. I would hope not many, but quite possibly there are a noticeable percentage. That just seems like it's a cheaper way to do it than getting the variants, but it seems like an expensive way to do it.
Yeah, absolutely.
What else do we have?
I've got a couple.
Okay.
Royals number one. What is it?
That is the new, one of the new Inhumans titles.
Okay.
That's featuring the royal family, Medusa and crew going off into space with, Marvel Boy of the, I guess of the Young Avengers, we'll say.
And let's let the listeners in, number one's at rank 42,940,941. Number two's at rank 79, down 30% to 28,370.
Yeah. So, how did the, I'd have to pull up the number of variants or whatnot on that first Royals, but 1 in 25, 1 in 15, order 200% of Uncanny Avengers number 16, you get three other covers you can unlock. Issue 2 only had a 1 in 25, so a lot of this is, again, inflation from variants.
But here is the reason I bring that up. What surprised me about that is it sold better than at ranks 57, Black Panther, the crew number one, which only sold 35,604, seems a little low for a Black Panther number one.
Agreed. Would even agree more if Black Panther was in the issue.
Okay.
That was another one Drew and I reviewed.
Yes, it is. However, it did outsell Black Panther number 13, which is at rank 71 with 30,509. And then another issue you and Drew reviewed, one very not positive review, at rank 68, Nick Fury number one, selling 31,683.
Yeah, I believe Drew gave that an F rating. One of the listeners, I forget who, has since gotten the issue, wanting to see what an F rating was, and seemed to concur with the rating.
Yes, we did see that.
You will see how long that one lasts. To me, the most surprising Marvel comic on the list this time around was at rank 86. And the surprise is not where it ranked. Monsters Unleashed number 1, 27,317 units. And I knew this was coming. My surprise was that it did indeed come. This is Drew and I think talked about this. I'm trying to remember if
we did it. Second Monsters Unleashed series of the year.
Yes. After the event series that flopped.
And we're in April.
Yeah. My question is, are they going to get to a third volume this year?
Third? How about fourth? Have we had a fourth volume in a year yet?
Okay, say this goes 5 issues. It's a monthly comic. They'd have time to launch a third. I don't know if they've had time to launch a fourth. But it's assuming it's monthly.
Exactly.
I'd have to check on that. And those sales are with a 1 in 25, a 1 in 50 cover, and 2 meter exceed 100% of Monsters Unleashed number 2 of the previous series to get number 1. There is something fundamentally bizarre, and this is not the first time, that the order more than as much or more of X, and the X is the second issue of the previous volume that this is the first issue for. That's how fast the turnaround on these volumes are.
Yeah.
It's nuts. And again, Monsters Unleashed flopped. Now, there is another flop a little higher on the list for Marvel at rank 77, Iron Fist.
It dropped
a staggering 68% from 61,003 units down to 28,649 units. So when somebody says, oh, the sales on this issue are so great, it's a successful book. If it's a Marvel book, give it an issue.
Here's the interesting thing, and it's funny we talked about this, as someone who started picking up the Epic collections, Iron Fist is the only one that's sold out and out of print.
Yeah, I saw that you put that on the Slack channel. I was quite unhappy about that, because that was the one that was interesting to me.
Which is interesting that, obviously, you weren't the only person in that boat. It was the one that was interesting, apparently, to a lot of people.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I found that interesting. The other one that I look at and I go, wow, that's shocking. And then I looked at the history and I went, okay, it's not shocking. Now I don't remember why it was shocking last month. At rank 116, Gwenpool number 14, 17,972, down 33%. But looking at its sales history, it's kind of right in line. The real question is, why was it up so much last month? And I don't remember having that discussion.
I don't think we did have that discussion. Sometimes it's hard to keep track of which crazy variants from Marvel we've talked about and which ones we have not. Let me, again, so for people not sitting over my shoulder, which thankfully is everybody, I'd be really worried if you're all sitting over my shoulder. I've got a computer monitor here. Actually, I've got two. One of them, in addition to having the spreadsheet, I'm pulling up the retailer order forms as we're talking about these things, so I can kind of go figure out what was the crazy variants and stuff on these. Gwenpool.
Gwenpool.
I keep getting those confusing. How many damn Gwens do we need? Gwenpool had number 13 had a regular cover and a order 90% of Gwenpool 10 of regular covers of Gwenpool 13. Order as many of this variant as you want. This variant was one of the venomized variants, and this is one of those theme variants that seemed to do pretty well.
So a theme variant got a 33% boost that all went away. Actually, to be fair, it didn't all go away. This issue is still higher than 12.
Yeah.
So maybe it worked.
But it's also the second lowest selling of the run, granted only by 3 copies.
Yes.
But still 3 copies. It's...
Some of the other ones that just stick out as semi-shocking,
mm-hmm.
Or not shocking these days, at rank 95, America number 2, down 44%, losing 19,000 to hit at 23,987. And then way down at rank 134, Elektra number 3, losing another 23%, down to 15,113.
And at 15,000 within 3 issues, I mean, that's...
It's not long for this world.
Yeah. I was going to say, whether that's Danger Zone or not with Marvel, it's hard to tell. This is the second month in a row Slapstick fell below the top 300. And if a white guy can't sell a comic for Marvel, I mean...
And another interesting one, in a similar position to Elektra, but even lower at rank 147, Kingpin number 3, down another 44% to 13,765.
Yeah, I'm kind of thinking that, I mean, these were ones that they put out there because of the interest in the characters because of the Netflix series. And I think that was...
a mistake?
Not only a mistake, but reflective of the thinking at Marvel, apparently. Geez, Deadpool's doing good. Let's give him a team. We've got the Mercs for the money. That's doing okay. Let's take half that team and give them their own ongoing title that'll be a de facto miniseries. Guardians of the Galaxy, they're popular. Let's give most of that team their own titles. Oh, those flopped. Let's relaunch them again. Oh, that didn't work so well. Let's relaunch them again. You know, oh, there's interest in Daredevil, so let's take every related character out of the Netflix stuff and give them their own books.
Yeah,
I mean, we've also got a Jessica Jones title floating around, and it's doing all right.
Yeah.
It's up above, where was that one?
That's Spider-Woman, right?
No, Jessica Jones is...
Jessica Jones?
Yeah, it's at 100.
Yep.
But, I mean, she had her own series from Netflix. She's going to be part of the Defenders. We're getting a Defenders comic. So, I mean, I get the attempt at cross-pollination and trying to have that synergy and such. But what that tells me is, well, why didn't we get a Legion series to go with that show on, what was it, Fox or whatever? Are we going to get a Cloak and Dagger series to go with that series on Freeform? And maybe we should, maybe we shouldn't. I don't know. But it'd be nice to have stuff that doesn't just die on the vine like some of these.
Yeah.
You know, when you've got just a so-so launch and then it gets down to the point of, is it going to survive or not? I mean, if you go down to rank 154, we've got Rocket Raccoon number 5, 13,373 units, and it's got a new series for Rocket coming up soon.
Well, you haven't even gotten to the ones I actually wanted to get to next.
Okay, let's keep going down.
196 and lower, books under 10,000, Unstoppable Wasp number 4 at 9,780, and that's a fourth issue. Great Lakes Avengers number 7 at rank 211, 8370. Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur number 18, rank 214, 7966. And Patsy Walker Hellcat number 17 at rank 227, 6943. And the last one that is in the top 300, as you pointed out, Mosaic number 7 at 5867.
Yeah. They've got a lot of books that...
That's quite a list below 10,000.
Yeah. And again, there was a point where that just would not have happened for Marvel. DC, sure. But DC is a bit of an underdog in the race between them.
But now we're talking... Not only are we below 10,000, with books like Mosaic and Hellcat, you're talking books barely above 5,000.
I don't think Mosaic should have been greenlit to begin with. I think it was a derivative concept of either Jericho or really Dead Man is the character, I would say. And it felt to have like a forced, oh, he's an NBA star, or, you know, whatever it was. I mean, I'm reading the book and it's just a little uninspired. It's,
yeah. And like I said, I am familiar with and love Patsy Walker, but clearly either this book is bad or there's not that much interest in that character. Maybe she needs to go back to being a supporting character with She-Hulk or something.
I think some of it's also the style.
Okay.
They're doing kind of a, it's.
Is it that weird, like, blocky art stuff?
It's almost comic strip cartoony style.
Okay.
You know, it's a very, very stylized thing. Going back to Mosaic for just a second, it's selling only about a dozen units more than Jughead.
Yes.
Rom is outselling Mosaic. It's just, yeah.
Okay, so we have beat the Marvel books to death.
I'm filtering them out of my list. Let them be gone.
I was going to say, Rom, one of, not by much, but one of my great pleasures, G.I. Joe, Real American Hero 239 is outselling Mosaic. Barely, but it is.
Yeah. I'll be honest, I've pretty much backed out entirely out of the Hasbro line at IDW.
Fair enough. I'm only in, I used to be kind of in more. I'm now just the Larry Hama, you know,
The G.I. Joe stuff. I totally get that. Yeah.
And not just the G.I. Joe. I'm off the new G.I. Joe stuff. I am down to that series, which I have every issue ever printed by all three companies. So,
Well, for me, I've never been a hardcore G.I. Joe fan. There's nothing wrong with the property. I've enjoyed it at times. But it was when they started mixing and matching and doing a shared universe there.
Yeah, it was.
I don't need the Transformers mixing in with G.I. Joe, mixing in with Rom, mixing in with Action Man and such. I'd kind of like those properties to just stand on their own.
I think they went a little too far. I got to tell you, ever since those TV shows that got most of us my age and slightly older and younger into it, there has been this desire to do G.I. Joe Transformers crossovers literally since 83.
Yeah, I have that crossover in the comics.
There's multiple ones. I mean, every 4 to 5 years, they do that crossover.
I mean, I get it. It's just...
It's a weird mix. While it seems like everybody would want it, it rarely is very good.
Yeah, to me, once you start having even the super soldier sort of military types of G.I. Joe mixing with the blatantly larger-than-life alien Transformers.
Robots. Yeah.
You know, in my mind, it's, I guess, the same sort of problem that people who have a hard time getting into, like, the Justice League. It's like, why do you need Superman and Batman?
Yes.
What's he do? You know, I mean, that's the kind of synaptic meltdown, I guess, I have with that crossover.
Yep.
No, but if it works for people, that's awesome. That's cool. It's something for everybody.
Yep. I'm going to say, let's look at DC for a minute. We've talked about the Lenticulars, the other Batman issue, the other Flash issue. I don't see anything overly interesting, except this is an interesting one to me. You guys reviewed it at rank 22.
Batman the Shadow. Yeah, that worked surprisingly well for me.
Number one at 55,920. Obviously, it's not going to stay there, but I mean, if it stays at 3/4 of this, that's got to be considered a huge win for particularly the Shadow franchise.
Yeah. I mean, even for just a Batman crossover kind of a thing, I think it's a win. I went in there with a little bit of trepidation, but again, it was a ton of fun. This one had a few different covers, but all of them have the wonderful phrase of there is no minimum purchase required to order this variant for them.
Got it.
They had a Sale variant, a Tim Sale, Cliff Chang, a blank variant, and a coloring book variant.
And they went with the, I'm assuming, the Lamont Cranston Shadow.
Yes. Yes, they
not
did.
Not the Kent Allard version?
Not the Kent Allard.
Yeah, okay.
Now, if you had asked me when I was reviewing the book who was Kent Allard, I'd be, I don't know. Again, not steeped in the shadow.
Yeah, he was the old Gibbons pulp novels version.
All right.
Anyways.
One of the ones I do want to call out for DC is at rank 142.
Yep.
Commandy Challenge is down at 14,205 units, an 8% drop. This is one, again, they've committed to doing all 12 issues in terms of, I assume they've already got most of them in progress. And I think it's just a labor of love for a lot of the people involved, which is awesome. How low does it go? Does it stay within the top 300 for the 12 issues? Don't know.
Yeah, the good thing for Commandy Challenge or bad thing for these other books, still outselling Cyborg and Blue Beetle.
Yes.
Which are at rank 151 and 153. Cyborg number 11, 13,677, and Blue Beetle number 8 at 13,406.
That is one thing that I do think is worth talking about with DC at the moment. If you filter the selection from not just publisher of DC, but the price change, we have a number of things that have gone up in price by a dollar. This includes
sure.
Titans, Super Sons, Trinity, Teen Titans, Batwoman, Red Hood and the Outlaws, Batman Beyond, Batgirl, Supergirl, Batgirl and the Birds of Prey, Hellblazer, Superwoman, New Superman, Cyborg, Blue Beetle, and we'll kind of, for the moment, ignore DC Comics Bombshell that might have just been the 25th issue there. But a bunch of their monthly titles, I think all their monthly titles, went up to the $3.99 price point, and all of them went down. The only one to go down drastically was the second issue drop on Batwoman, which I can kind of understand. Well, I was going to say I can kind of understand, but I'm thinking more from a reader perspective.
And the third issue drop on Wildstorm. Issues two and three tend to have drops, and those were pretty substantial.
Yeah. This really was a game changer, I think, because it made a lot of the items on the list be a heavy percentage at $3.99, and just, almost two-thirds or three-quarters of the list, is at $3.99 or more now.
Yeah.
Actually, over three-quarters is over that.
Other books that took substantial hits, again, a third issue, so not really necessarily related to price point. Super Sons number 3, down 13% to 40,510 at rank 45. Doom Patrol number 6, down 11%, but that wasn't a price increase. That was just a whole different mess of things. But Batgirl and the Birds of Prey, Hellblazer, and Superwoman are the three. They're all down kind of around 6%. And I think a lot of that could be that price increase.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. I, of course, am not in favor of a price increase. That having been said, I get why DC's doing it. I think they should take a look at which characters they've got out there and which characters they should have out there. I like Cyborg. He's not the character I necessarily would have put there. I think we also talked about this on the Slack channel. If they still have the rights, and I believe they do, but I'm not positive.
Oh, Static.
Static, absolutely.
I'd love to see a Static book.
He had one at the beginning of the New 52. It didn't go too well.
No.
But I don't think that's the fault of the character. He sustained a cartoon for five seasons.
Well,
he was like
the
breakout character from the Milestone universe.
He had the same problem everybody else had with the New 52 relaunches of kind of the C-list characters. For some reason, they had a random arm ripped off in about issue 4. That just happened to a bunch of characters.
Yeah.
I'm like, who thought this was a story point that every character needed?
Well, and I don't think they really played up what made that character so fun originally.
Yeah.
In my mind, he's got the potential of being kind of the DC version of Spider-Man. He's young, he's got a scientific mindset, and he's got powers that allow him to kind of play around with that, with the whole electromagnetic stuff. I mean, it's what if Peter Parker was Electro, kind of, is the shtick.
Yeah.
And they've done some fun stuff with the character, and I'd like to see that version come back. But I don't think they're going to invest in that character. I don't think they're going to do that. But I don't think what they're doing with Cyborg is particularly working. I don't think what they're doing with Blue Beetle is particularly working. And most of these other characters are titles on the list are the characters you would expect. They're almost the evergreens. There are one or two that aren't, with like Deathstroke and stuff, but they keep giving him a series nonetheless.
Yeah, well, the other ones that are kind of down in this weird, lowish area of around 15,000, they took some chances, and I'm not sure they're working. Books like New Superman, Superwoman, Hellblazer continuing to be in the mainstream universe, Batgirl and the Birds of Prey. I I love the Birds of Prey. I love Batgirl. I'm not sure. I'm not sure you can support two books.
That's fair. That's fair. I don't think they should be trying, and I also don't. Well, the other thing that's odd with Birds of Prey is not only is it Batgirl and, but it's got Black Canary, who's also a regular over in Green Arrow.
Green Arrow. Yep.
So there's an aspect where I'm trying to juggle of, well, how does Black Canary split her time? How does Harley Quinn split her time? And there's aspects of that where it's just, it doesn't quite make sense.
Well, and as we talked about in that same discussion with Static, there is an entire era of Titans missing. You know, the Cassie Wonder Woman's gone. Ms. Martian's gone.
Well, to set the scenes for the listeners, you always had kind of the Justice League.
Mm-hmm.
With the Flash of Two Worlds way back when, they set up the JSA as kind of the elder statesman, the more experienced, you know, grandfatherly types.
Also currently mostly missing from the Rebirth era.
Absolutely. But then they had the Robin, Kid Flash, that original realm of or group of sidekicks that over the years aged up. So they put in another group beneath them. And now they've kind of put in another group beneath them.
And gotten rid of what used to be the youngest group. That group just disappeared.
Yeah. And it you could almost kind of mark the age groups almost with the Batman family, if you will.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a bit of a stretch to say, well, I guess Alfred would equate to the JSA. I mean, not really, but you know what I mean.
No, well, no, it is. It's the Tim Drake-led Titans that's gone.
Yeah. Well,
and Connor almost has to be gone.
But I think there's also not only those characters, but also the Jason Todd level. A lot of those characters. Connor Hawk, Green Arrow.
Yep.
I'm trying to think of some of the others that were in that ilk. They've just kind of dispersed. They weren't really the Titans either, but there's, because they've tried to compress the time frame, they've squeezed out, I don't want to say literally generations of characters, but figuratively.
Yeah, and both of the characters we're talking about do still exist. Tim Drake's doing his thing over in Detective. Red Hood's doing his thing.
In Outlaws, yeah.
In his own book, essentially. The other one, what about, do the other original Titans have a home? Raven and Starfire.
They're in the Teen Titans right now.
Oh, they are. Yeah, that's right. They're in that one. Okay.
They've done a mishmash and taken a lot of the characters that were new Teen Titans minus Cyborg and made them Titans. Teen Titans, I mean, over with Damian.
Yeah, with Damian. So, like I said, I understand with the current incarnation of Superman and everything, Connor almost has to go. There's got to be room for Wonder Girl, though. I'm not sure why you can't have Cassie.
Well, and again, both of those existed in the New 52. They just kind of quietly walked off stage in various ways at various times. Same with Impulse and a few others.
Yeah, Bart could certainly exist as well.
They've crowded those characters out, but I think part of it is they also mismanaged many of those characters.
Yeah.
Specifically, Impulse and the Connor Kent Superboy.
Well, and then there's the new Titans from the New 52 group that I'm assuming we will never see again. The bug thing chick, the guy with the purple constructs, the group I'm talking about.
Bunker, some of those. Yeah.
I don't remember the spider chick's name.
I'm trying to remember, and it's...
But yeah,
one of the many I've repressed. But again, that was the title in which we got Connor, we got Cassie, we got some of those others. It's just, I don't think DC has really figured out how to position some of these characters. And because they had done such a passing of the mantle legacy sort of a stacking before, when they compressed the time frame, it didn't work.
Yeah.
But I think if they had taken some of these and repositioned and reimagined them just a little bit, they could have wound up with the equivalent of an Outsiders or an Infinity Inc. sort of a group, something that is, maybe they weren't the sidekicks of these characters, but were inspired by some of these. So maybe Connor Hawk in the Rebirth era wouldn't need to be related to Oliver Queen or whatnot, but hey, if an Archer can do it, I can do it, you know, kind of a thing.
Well, and that's the other thing. The other kind of classic Titans characters are Garth and Jericho anywhere is to be found.
Jericho is currently over in Deathstroke, although I find him completely unrecognizable and I don't like what they've done with the character.
Okay.
And Garth is over. Tula's definitely over in Aquaman. I'm thinking we've seen Garth from time to time there.
Okay.
They've recently brought back the Calderon version from the Young Justice cartoon of Aqualad over in Teen Titans.
Yeah.
I mean, they've got a ton of fun characters. It's just finding a home for all of them. And can we please get the JSA back? Can we get the Legion of Superheroes back? Can we get some of these other cool characters back? And hopefully we will.
But again, you can't do them all. I do understand you can't do them all. We're talking about all these ones that aren't quite working. And again, there is a reason you can't do them all. DC doesn't need to be putting out 90 books like Marvel. That's not going to help them.
Agreed entirely. But I think what you could do is
team them, make some teams out of these instead of individual books.
Yeah, make some teams out of them and maybe find a way to launch a title that has a clear theme and a clear kind of a through line, but not per se a title character.
Something
not an anthology either. But yeah, because
the DC Universe Presents didn't work either.
No, because it was truly an anthology. But if you had something where you could be weaving in, okay, let's bring Static in. He's part of the group of characters we're following or whatnot. A true non-team team.
Kind of like the Legion used to be, but with all these characters we're talking about.
Yep.
Yeah.
So I think they've got a lot of potential and stuff. They've got a lot of things that are working well. And I'm hoping that when the Rebirth arc kind of comes to fruition, that we get an influx of new energy from returning characters and hopefully some new characters, and that they are able to have that be kind of the equivalent of one novel in a series of novels that is the overarching DC Universe saga.
Yep.
And not kind of get to like where they did with the New 52, where they were building and building to kind of Forever Evil and a few of the mini arcs or whatever leading to that with like Pandora and stuff, I felt fell flat. But then after that, they didn't really have a game plan. And that's where things really unraveled.
Yeah, well, it's weird because Forever Evil was so good, but man, did it fall apart quickly after that.
Yeah, the universe became rudderless.
Yeah.
And hopefully they've taken that to heart and are course correcting. I think they are.
Yeah.
But I also think it's been a year since the DC Universe Rebirth one-shot came out. We're just now really getting the button, which is the next major installment of that. There are a few teases here and there, but it took a year for them to really move the story forward.
Yes, but I don't know. I personally am willing to give them that because they had to reintroduce who many of these characters were and what this world was in that time. You know, Superman, I mean, we got a new old, however you want to.
It took them a year to square that away, yes.
Exactly.
But I also think they squandered some of that time, and some of the arcs they did in Trinity and whatnot had a, well, does that matter anymore aspect to them, which makes me wonder if the sales are suffering a little because of that.
Yeah, well, Trinity, boy, if there's one book I think is completely unnecessary, that's it right now.
Yeah. I mean, to an extent, it's like the third Justice League book, except they don't allow the rest of the Justice League in.
Yeah, exactly. We've beat Marvel and DC to death. You want to look at everybody else. Let's see what we got here, because we got some interesting things, I think, here.
Okay. What strikes your fancy?
Well, how about we start with good old American Gods, which I think is fascinating. It ranks 66 for Dark Horse. Selling 33,000. Yes, it's down 26%, but for a second issue drop, compared to some of the ones we've talked about, that's not that bad.
No, if you want a second issue drop that's bad, go a little further down to rank 112 with Exo Manowar number 2. It dropped 67.83%. So, yeah.
But again, 19,471 still pretty good for a Valiant title.
Oh, absolutely. And again, its drop seems bad because of how high it was compared to how high that title would have normally sold. Yeah. Again, promotions, etc. And if that gets more people to sample a Valiant book, I think that's a good thing.
Yep.
Personally, I didn't find this start of this volume of Exo to be what I was looking for, which was more of the previous volume of Exo.
Yeah.
But that's just me.
Some other books, though. Image with a couple of launches that look pretty good. Redneck number 1 at 22,317 ranked 102 Rose number one ranked 108 at 20,499. Black Cloud number one rank 111 at 19,538. Plastic number one 18,980 at rank 114. So Image kind of doing what they do with these interesting and something the market at least finds semi-interesting in their new crop of titles, which they somehow do every month.
Again, I think that's part of what really makes Image fun to watch in terms of the sales and looking through previews every month, is they've always got five or six things launching.
Yep.
And, you know, they highlight those. They don't ignore the rest. They don't over-promote the new stuff with crazy covers or whatnot like Marvel does. And if you're looking for always that new shiny thing, Image is a great place to look for that.
Yeah. The other thing, do you have any explanation for these jumps that several Image books got, such as Seven to Eternity number 5, I Hate Fairyland number 12, and God Country number 4?
I believe all of these are the ones that had the April Fool's covers.
Gotcha.
That were last minute solicits, and personally, I don't think really well kind of communicated out.
Yeah. And going down a little further, Black Science and Invincible seem to have gotten these drops as well, just at these increases as well, just at lower numbers.
And again, I think it's because of those covers.
Okay. Fair enough. I'm trying to think anything else really interesting in here.
Trying to look a little further down the list, just because that's where some interesting stuff sometimes is hiding. The Doctor Who stuff is drifting down a little in sales. It's gotten to where it's in the 5,800 or 4,700 units and such.
Yep.
But again, they've got, you know, so many different Doctors floating around this time.
Well, you know, it's funny. For Free Comic Book Day, I went to my local shop, and as you know, DC didn't have anything particularly interesting. My little girl obviously grabbed that issue they had, that kind of kitty girl team book,
mm-hmm.
Which she loved. But so one of the things I grabbed to bring to a friend of ours who is a big Doctor Who fan is the Doctor Who one. She's not a comic fan. Gave it to her. She was kind of flipping through it. And she's like, wow, they have like series for all. How many of these books do they make?
Well, and that's part of it for me is I'm liking the books, but I was telling Drew on the Weekly Comics Spotlight in terms of if I start cutting stuff, Titans kind of at risk with the Doctor Who stuff with me. And it's not that I don't like it, but there's just so much of it. And it's not that it's, oh my God, it's amazing. But between, you know, the 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th Doctors all having their own books. We've got right now the Ghost Stories miniseries. There's also the Torchwood series, although it didn't have an issue on the list this time around. It's just, there's like one or two every week. And this is actually something I was going to mention with X-Men Blue and Gold. Those titles started on off weeks, and I think my most recent shipment had one of each of Blue and Gold. It's like, dude, if you've got these, space them out.
Is that a schedule problem or is that a conscious choice?
I think it's a schedule problem. They may think it's a conscious choice.
Okay, let me rephrase that. Were those books supposed to come out two in the same week, or was one book just a week late?
That is an excellent question. And I know X-Men Gold fell behind a week on the second issue, and Blue, I think, is on track, and it was the week of the 26th, so it was because X-Men Gold fell behind.
Yeah, okay. Which, again, those things do happen, and when you've got weekly books like that, it's much easier for that thing, because any one gets behind, you've got that problem.
Exactly, exactly. And then when you start to have, you know, stacked up, you know, four Doctors or whatever, you're going to wind up with some of them shipping in the same week. It just, that's the way it goes.
Yeah.
And really, it wasn't too bad in terms of, I think Ghost Stories came out on the 5th of April, the 11th Doctor on the 12th, along with the 11th and 12th Doctors on April 12th. Then on the 19th was just the 10th, but on the 26th was the 9th and the 12th Doctors. It was the 12th Doctor shipped twice, because, I mean, come on. I think with the increased frequency that we're seeing at a lot of the publishers, it just, if you blink, you miss an issue.
Yeah. And we gloss.
It's right. Nice to have the speed, but it's like it's hard to keep up.
Yeah. We glossed over, or we didn't gloss over, we talked about Exo, but I didn't go down farther for Valiant. I ranked 245 and ranked 248 are Faith and Ninjak, number 10 and 26, each of which received a slight bump. Is that attributable to shenanigans, or are these just books that are gaining a little bit of following?
That is an excellent question. Let me bounce down to...
I mean, neither of them went up huge, about 100 copies each, but...
All right, so with Ninjak, we have some variant covers going on here.
They always have some.
Two of them had no order restrictions. One was for every 20 of the other A, B, or C covers, you could order one of the Bob Layton variant. For every 50 of the A, B, or C in any combination, you could order one of the Tula Latote variants.
Okay, so they had some variants, okay.
But the difference with their variants, and it's a subtle difference, is it's not just the regular cover, it's any of the open-to-order cover combinations.
So they've essentially got three regular covers, and if you order some combination of those up to,
exactly.
You can get the special one.
And then for Faith... Because I don't think either of them were at a point story-wise that the story would kind of trigger that. Faith had, three regular covers, order open to order, and then a 1 in 20 cover.
Okay. And is Valiant still doing some form of returnability on some of these?
I don't think so. If you look over at column AJ, these are not marked as returnable.
Okay. I seem to remember they did something. That was with Exo, wasn't it, that first one?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Faith was a new story arc. Ninjak was the middle of an arc or nearing the end of one. I forget which part.
A book I thought was pretty good, and I still continue to, a little mini-series. The James Bond Felix Leiter book's pretty good, but man, James Bond can barely sell. Why they think they need to do a Felix book, I haven't figured out yet.
I enjoyed the first issue of the Dynamite Entertainment book below that, which was Greatest Adventure, number one.
Ah, yes.
7,444 units. I'm wondering how that's going to do, if that kind of connects with the Edgar Rice Burroughs fans out there, if that's a big enough crowd, and or if Bill Willingham's following kind of picks it up.
It's funny. I am a fan of both Bill Willingham in Edgar Rice Burroughs, and I did hear your review, and I still didn't pick that book up. Maybe I should go back and look it up or wait for the trade.
Yeah, well, hopefully it does well, because we've seen that Willingham certainly can play the long game if he's got the issues to do it over.
Yeah, and I love the Burroughs stuff. I'm not sure how you mix some of those characters.
So far they've done well, but they haven't really mixed them all that much, and I'm not familiar enough with them to know if it's following the ringing true to the characters or not.
Well, even the two biggest ones, I'm not sure how you get Tarzan and John Carter in the same book, let alone some of the other ones.
In this case, they're doing a cross world sort of a thing. Mm. So they haven't brought in John Carter, but they didn't bring in one or two of the other people from Mars.
Gotcha.
And they're providing the ship that Tarzan is captaining off to the adventure. So who knows, maybe they'll make him stop on Mars and pick up John and Deja Thoris and some others.
Or come back to Earth and pick up his body.
Could be. They left Earth with enough other people, though, that too soon to turn back.
It's the great thing about John. Is he really here or really there?
Yeah. Of course, I'm one of the people who actually enjoyed the John Carter movie.
I've talked about this ad nauseum with different people. I think the film's actually pretty good. It was possibly the worst marketing mistake Hollywood's had in a decade.
Yeah.
And it was based off a bad, the decision was based off an idiotic reason for a cartoon that failed.
Mm-hmm. Another one from Dynamite worth mentioning is down at 289. It's the second issue of Nancy Drew Hardy Boys.
Mm-hmm.
4,456 units. That's down 53.05%.
Oh, yeah, that is ugly.
That's a bit harsher than I would have expected, to be honest.
Another book we occasionally like to talk about, Uncle Scrooge at IDW for its 25th issue, got a pretty big bump, actually, because you don't have 24 must have fallen below the radar.
Yeah. So compared to 23...
It's a small bump, but... considering 24 was even lower, it's a pretty good bump for an anniversary-ish issue.
What would 24 have been? Because what was the floor of the list last month? Because that shifts, of course, from month to month.
Yeah, it does.
Give me just a sec to pull up last month's list.
And what was number 300 last month?
Exactly. 300 was 4,812.
So it was higher than it would have expected to have been. Okay, so last month was a high number, 300.
Yeah.
So
so it could have been right in between or right around where 23 and 25 sold.
It went up 3 from 23, so even that, even if it was right there, it's essentially flat, which I don't know if 43.59 is sustainable, but at least it's not losing anymore.
I would think it's sustainable, given that it's Uncle Scrooge. And what I mean by that is this is something that my understanding of the way this works is once somebody creates like an Uncle Scrooge story, it's available to the other licensees.
Okay.
So suppose this is really big over in Europe, and it is.
Yeah.
So it's not a hypothetical. I mean, a lot of the stories they're printing are reprints. So they may have to translate, they may need to redo the word balloons, but I believe there's a lower cost of production here. I could be wrong on that. Either way, it's some great stories. But if you look at, because I just did a quick chart of the 2003 series, the 2009 series, and then the 2015 series, and I'd have to dig around and make sure I got the publishers correct on this, but the 2003 one, really, it's around 5,000, dipping down to 4,200-ish. It started back in 2003 a bit above that, but really from mid-2004 to end of 2008, it was in the 4,000 to 5,000 range. The next volume, which picked up in 2009, I think this might have been the boom run, really kind of was in that same kind of a ballpark, getting as low as 3,300. Then when this one started back up, it started almost at 20,000, but has really been following steadily to right around now, where again, it's leveled off about where the title had been kind of historically over the last 14, 15 years.
Mm.
I think there's a certain aspect of, unless you're doing something really kind of groundbreaking or almost by definition a new seminal run on a title, most titles have a level that they're just going to naturally gravitate towards.
Yeah.
You know, there's around so many fans of this, that, or the other. And I think that number naturally dwindles over time for properties. Mainly because I think comics are not so good about getting new people into the fold. And then over time, existing fans just kind of either drift away or die.
Yeah. And Uncle Scrooge is such a unique book. And A, it's been around as long as everything else. And really has had two monumentally important and kind of seminal runs.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't think of a book that's had two creators over a 60-year period, essentially, that so defined that character.
Karl Barks and Don Rosa.
Don Rosa, yeah. Both of them. Like I said, both of those runs are just epic classic runs.
Absolutely. I do think if you were to go like with the Marvel stuff, I think you could, there would usually be the original defining run and then the other seminal run.
Okay. So yeah, there's the Lee Kirby era and then there's one other classic run somewhere.
Yeah. But I think that's a little different than this because I don't think Barks was the original guy for Scrooge, was he? Maybe he was.
I don't. Yeah, who knows?
I'm not well versed enough to know that. But in other words, it's one thing for the original creator to really make a run with the character, and then somebody else.
But years later. However you look at it, he wasn't the original. I mean, he wasn't one of the Walt Disney animators that worked on, you know, the shorts and created the character.
He made right. A comic, but was he the
he
one?
He might have
that-
been the first comic, but he didn't create the character.
Even if he didn't create the character, did he define the character as we really know him?
Probably.
Because
even
I mean,
if there was somebody before him, I think he defined. It's hard to argue Karl Barks didn't define who Scrooge is.
Well, it's in my mind, it's kind of like Deadpool. He was created by Fabian Utiesa and Rob Liefeld, but I really think
it was Joe Casey's character.
Exactly. He came into his own later.
Yeah.
And again, nothing right or wrong about that sort of a thing. It can take a while for somebody to find a take on a character that really kind of clicks with the audience at the time.
take a look at price points or anything? You had mentioned them earlier.
Yeah, I was just about to go there. 221 out of the top 300 items were at $3.99. Only 45 at $2.99. We had 11 at $1. I think almost all of those, if not all of them, were the
believers.
True Believers stuff.
And we had 19 at $4.99.
Yeah, it's, you know, we've got like 80% of the list at $3.99 or above. You know, 81.3 actually, but $2.99. I mean, as much pushback as there's been against $3.99, it is here. It is stuck. It's predominant. It's. I appreciate DC, which is the main one at $2.99, although not exclusively. I think Image still has a couple, but really, it's the twice monthly books that are $2.99. DC, I think, is trying to compete on price point, not exclusively. They've really stepped up their game on content, but I do appreciate them not trying to break the bank. Whereas Marvel really, I think, has no regard for that at all.
No.
You look at the frequency with the, again, Secret Empire coming out like every other week.
At $5?
At $4.99 or $3.99. That's just harsh, you know?
Well, if you look at the top, let's call it 11. 10 would be nice, but since 11's in there. There's four $2.99 books in the top 11, and they are the two non-lenticular Batmans, the non-lenticular Flash, and Walking Dead, which, to be fair, is a black and white book.
Yes. First issues from Marvel getting the $4.99 they get. Event titles, I mean, there are certain books the publishers are going to price there because they can kind of get away with it. All-Star Batman fits into that category, too.
You mean the $12.99 book on the list?
I was thinking All-Star Batman.
Oh, not All-Star. Yes, I was.
You were thinking
Dark Knight Returns.
Dark Knight Returns, Three Master Race or whatever. But even that has a cheaper one at $5.99.
Yes, there's a $5 version.
A bargain at any price except that. But again, they could get away with it. And they got to make their money somewhere, I guess. And it's gets a little expensive.
It does.
Which I think is a large part of the reason it's hard to get new people into comics. There's just not the return on the investment for the dollars.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
Since we're talking price point, did you want to talk any about should they have split the lenticular edition out as a separate item for Flash and Batman?
It is what it is. It's the way it's always been done. As we just pointed out, the $12.99 and $5.99 Dark Knight are also split. The previous, when they had to... unwittingly were forced into printing non-lenticular versions because of the overabundance, they split them. When things are at different price points, you just have to do that. I get it.
Yeah.
From a bookkeeping side on Diamond side, where I'm sure they just push a button and generate these reports, it's the way it's going to be.
Well, and it's one of the few cases where we can tell how a variant cover did compared to the non-variant covers.
Yeah.
Because they have the different order codes in this case.
On the other hand, if you did it for every variant cover, we'd lose half the list. And like I said, I get it. Diamond's doing the best they can. Considering they really don't have to do anything.
Yeah.
I can't complain too much. Again, this time it just worked out where you could look at it clearly and go, oh, these two books actually outsold that one.
In an ideal world, what I would enjoy having is, okay, one entry per item, but then have the list of order codes and what percentage went to what.
Yeah.
But I can also tell you, if I had to write the report to generate that data,
yep,
I would be a very unhappy camper, because that would take some serious work to do.
Absolutely it would.
It'd be a bit of a pain. So, I mean, it's just not worth it. And again, that's... edge case need for it in for what these things are originally meant to do in terms of helping retailers order and stuff. I don't think it would be of much help. Oh, maybe it is with the number of variant covers. Be interesting to ask some retailers. I'll have to ask Eric that at some point. Eric, you've just been asked. You can find me on Slack. See, he's asked. It's just that easy. No. Yeah, this was another slightly below average month. Not radically so, but again. The total was around, what was the total around? About 6.5 million. So it's a little lower than it was last month, which was a little higher than it was the month before. But, you know, you compare it over the last year or so, and really other than May of last year, this is some of the lower stuff we've had over that time. But again, we also had some record highs during that time going back to like August.
Yeah, absolutely. As long as we talked about the split, do you have any comment on where the order index value was set? And are you surprised they set it on the lenticular, not the regular?
I am not surprised by that at all, because what they do is they take effectively the top-selling Batman book.
Okay.
In this case, it happened to be the lenticular, but it really does not matter.
No, it clearly doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's...
I found it interesting. I figured it just would have been Batman, and it probably would have been the regular one.
I think if they'd done that, it would have been interesting, because I think if they had done that, people would have assumed before Milton, John Jackson Miller, and I had released the numbers that Secret Empire did even better.
Mm.
Because it would have had that higher order index, and people would have assumed, oh, well, clearly it's done brilliant. Because there's that instinctive incorrect response to think 100 is 100 is 100 from month to month, which it is not.
That's true. Case,
it's a percentage.
As it is, it had a rank of 124.96, and if they had used the non-lenticular, it would have been almost 200.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So people would have been speculating, oh, it's broken 200,000, maybe more, whatever, you know, and it's...
Yeah.
It's easy to misread these things.
Yeah. I wonder how much time they spend trying to make them easier to read or not. Sometimes I wonder if they don't intentionally go the other way.
I certainly don't get the impression they're trying to make things harder. I do think some of this is hard to make clear and hard to report on just because of some of the insanity and stuff from the publishers.
Well, and that's the thing. Do the publishers do some of the things they do to make it harder?
Oh, to game the system? Both to make it harder and to make them look better? Absolutely.
To make themselves look better, we had that discussion last month. I think we're pretty clear that's absolutely done. Is it made to confuse the issue when they can't make themselves look better? Also possibly is probable.
Yeah. There's a bit of smoke screen in terms of also just how they talk about the numbers and stuff like that. And I get it. But of course,
they're PR people. It's what
they got to spin the stuff. One of the things that really kind of stuck out to me, though, as I was going through the numbers this time, was particularly looking at some of the drops at Marvel and some of this other stuff, is just the level of volatility that we've got in the market right now. And I don't think it's unique to right now, but the month-to-month swing is about 8, almost 9%, I think 8.85 is what I had calculated, of the total of the top 300. And it's almost a coin flip, is it up or down? You know, and that's what I did is I took the absolute value of the month-to-month change in the top 300 units and divided that by the number of months, yada, yada, to get the average. I had to do the absolute value because if you take just the average of them, then a plus 100 one month and a minus 100, well, there's no swing. It's always the same. It's like, no, it shifted, actually. The average swing in that case would have been 100. But that swing, while it's an average of about 8-9%, can be as much as like 31 or 32% of the total. There have been times where, you know, 1 million, 2 million units gets added or subtracted over the course of 1 month. And that's pretty major, particularly given that the thing is the total is averaging around, let me go double check what the average is on this. I was going to say about 6.5 million, 6.6 million. Actually, it's 6,645,236 as of this month. I recalculate that average over the final order era every month, so it changes a little. But the low is about 4.4 million. The high is about 9.35 million, a little over. So if you can lose 2 million or something, you know, I mean, that really shows seriously how quickly the bottom could drop out of the market or how quickly we could go to a new record high again. You know, it's the lack of stability, I think, is a reflection of the collector mentality, the rotation of titles, and things of that sort. And I think that it's not even fluidity, but that instability is not good.
Yeah, I actually think there's a chance we will see some record highs. Assuming DC doesn't take any major missteps, and when that Marvel relaunch legacy numbering thing kicks in, you could see another record month or two.
But to me, that's reflective of the instability. If it gets to where we've got an upswing and things are doing better, versus we get a high and then it drops right back down to about where it was.
Yeah, and obviously that'll be on Marvel to keep those people, like DC so far has done with Rebirth.
Yeah, and I think DC's getting some serious momentum behind them. I think Marvel is potentially repositioning to get that, whether the legacy stuff does that or not. I'm half expecting that's going to backfire on them, because it really shows how they've taken so many of their characters and created almost watered-down versions of them, or at least duplicate versions of them, whether you consider them watered-down. In some cases, the secondary one's more interesting. I just...
A copy is always a copy is always a copy.
Yeah, there's that. It's... When I saw that Alex Ross Generations image, it really drove home to me how... there is a sense of redundance and not a sense of legacy. Whereas I think I've seen similar generational aspects at DC with the JSA, the JLA, the Titans, the Young Justice, yada yada, that had a passing of the torch aspect versus a passing of the baton from season to season as they're zigzagging back and forth on a field at Marvel. But that's my cynical viewpoint there. Hopefully other people don't share that, but you know, we'll see what happens. So that's pretty much about all I got this time.
Me too.
It's always fun to look at the numbers, always fun to discuss them. If people have questions, whenever you see the article at some of these sites going up with the top 10 or whatever, that means I've gotten the list and I'm busy crunching them versus putting up a press release or whatever that other people do, which is fine.
Yep.
If you've got questions at that point, by all means, email me, post them on the forum, Slack, whatever. Because usually at that point, I'm trying to figure out, what the hell am I going to talk about? Sometimes it's easy, sometimes not so much. But as we're moving towards convention season and stuff, we've got a Marvel event starting in full swing. That's going to be interesting to see how that plays out for Marvel. Hopefully that'll re-energize them. And then what's kind of the fallout from the button and stuff at DC. It's rarely a boring month where there's just nothing to talk about.
That is true. And we can talk about all kinds of crazy stuff, even if it's not related to the numbers, like half of this episode.
I do have that ability. That is true. So with that, I think we'll call it an episode.
Sounds good.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com. under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the comic book page website. Please email us at themailreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening. The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If they differ from your reality, please verify you are in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the month in question. The Diamond Order Index only goes 2 decimal places, and therefore there is a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title. Some numbers are rounded to the nearest 100 for convenience. This may introduce a further level of inaccuracy. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications there's at least one retailer that may have an excessive amount of empty shelf space with dust it needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 different comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of top 300 comic books for the month. The list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 100 different graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of top 100 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, lists of top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 50.5 or excuse 10 items. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time that you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which as far as I know now, has not been successfully invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales any comic books, graphic novels, and or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 100 graphic novels and collected editions lists is included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. No information about sales or lack of sales any items sold outside the Diamond Comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for, and no amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer is here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is void in the ultimate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Math, logic, and the English language itself seem to work very differently there.